everybody. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. A rare download this week has been all White Sox games. How about that? Today they played, of course, during the day, losing to the Indians. But this will be the only broadcast of the download this week. And as you're just hearing in the Rokan crosstalk, the final download. If you're not aware, of course, the scheduling changes go into effect on Monday the 18th, and you've maybe listening to WGN, hearing me on the Cochran Show every morning. I'm joining that show permanently starting on Monday, along with Pete Zimmerman. We're very excited about it. It's been a great week of getting up at the crack of dawn, and now I don't even know what time it is. I don't. This is the final download, and it's very exciting, too, because most of the time in radio, once it's announced that your show is over, you're out. You're done. Because they're afraid that the jocks are going to get on the air and be like, I can't stand management. Do the whole thing about burning bridges because they're out. So it is a very, I feel very honored and humbled that they would let us come on the show. And here's my rant about management. No. But what we're going to do tonight is just a class. We're just going to do, it's their loss because they probably should have taken us off the air. Because all we're doing tonight is clips and Broadway show tunes. That's it. That's what we decided. The best way to end the download is to just clip the show. Here are the best one-liner interview clips from the last 3 years of download. Take it away. Oh, we don't have it? That would be the worst. That doesn't work on the radio. You know, like we did that for Milt Rosenberg when he died, which I thought was very fitting because it showed time, place, and energy. But the idea of a montage to put together to... Right, you don't know who's talking, when's talking, all that kind of stuff.
My favorite part about the movie,
who is this? I always hate that. No, we got a great show. A lot of our regulars are coming through tonight. We're going to talk coming up at 7:30 with Heather Sharon from the Daily Line. We'll talk about the big bullet train, the tunnel train, as I like to call it, the boring tunnel train. They're talking about from downtown to O'Hare Airport, among other things in city, state, and county politics. Heather Sharon joins us at 7:30. 8 o'clock tonight, two of our favorite guests. I really love Mario Smith and Amara Enya. They'll join us to do sort of a truncated reload. We'll talk about this week's news. And we haven't had a reload in such a long time because White Sox usually play on Friday nights. That's what we're going to do. 9 o'clock, 20th anniversary. I love this. 20th anniversary of the Chicago Bulls victory against the Utah Jazz. 1998, today. So, as you can understand and imagine, this is both celebratory and completely pathetic in the way that this was the final day in which Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Kim Jong Rodman, Coach Phil Jackson all had a place in Chicago. After that, it became the Tim Floyd era, which started after this game. So, how about that? So, we'll talk about that. And we end the download tonight with the swap meet. Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker. He's been a big part of our show, 312-981-7200. You can brag about your best collectibles, memorabilia, your junk. We'll evaluate it. So we got all that coming up tonight. So we got a big show, including the carryout coming up. We're not phoning in the final show. There are some phoners, but we're not phoning it in. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Pam Jones and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a quick break, come back, and do the carryout, so stay with us. All right, it's the Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Now it's time for the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news, so you at home, you don't have to. All right, here are today's top stories. Elon Musk was in town today to introduce a new express train / amusement park ride that will go straight from downtown to O'Hare Airport in 12 minutes in a tunnel, like we're Mail or the Goonies. I'm having a hard time feeling anything wrong with this story. I want to be so cynical, right? It's Elon Musk, it's Mayor Emanuel. Man, taking an hour to get into the city from the airport's a joke. And there's nothing worse than seeing the beautiful skyline from the airplane than realizing how far you actually are from it. I think Hall and Oates said it best. So close, yet so far away. We're living in a dream world. Now the company that's going to make the train is called the Boring Company. That's a pretty dumb name. So there's my snark, right? Nailed it. Also, the train's going to cost a lot to take. So go ahead, add that to the cost of going to Cleveland. Throw an extra couple bucks on that. Also, why to the airport? I'm sure that the Metro riders who were screwed over this week would love the option to go 12 minutes in a tunnel from Mount Prospect to Clybourne. Or how about the Blue Line? Just replace the Blue Line with a bullet train. Or even better, what if they teamed up with Great America and did a train from Gurnee to downtown that was both an express train and the new demon? Right? This is Gurnee. Next stop, we'll be your last. Keep your hands and feet inside the ride.
The demon. Remember that music?
Yeah, right. Right?
And smoke and fire.
The You'd demon. Pay 12 bucks for that,
I
right?
I would totally go. I'd be in the, like, the repeat line.
You can fast pass it. The FBI inspector, yeah, exactly. The FBI inspector general had a press conference today to say that the former FBI director James Comey's actions were both extraordinary and insubordinate. That's what we've been saying, said comment from both Democrats and Republicans. This was particularly about the Hillary Clinton email investigation, where he both let her off and ruined her chances to be president at the same time. So yeah, glad we got to the bottom of that. This is one of the weirder stories in D.C. where everyone interprets it their own way, which is every story coming out of D.C. My interpretation, Comey is laughing his way to the bank. And at the same time, a scapegoat for everything. There you go. The Supreme Court struck down a Minnesota law that said election judges can't wear political clothing. Was this really a thing that we spent money deciding? Ruth Bader Ginsburg is getting old, people. We need to be more choosy about what makes it to the Supreme Court, right? So one old lady wanted to wear her Dick Cheney turtleneck and now thousands of clerks and lawyers got paid? Come on! All right, so you can do it. America, you can too now get paid $6 an hour and no one can make you take off your Hillary Clinton pantsuit. There you go. Hooray, Supreme Court, you did it! You solved the biggest injustice in the world. You did it. In weather, just remember this day, people. Let's shut our eyes. Remember when it's January 23rd, 2019. Let me do this for you, okay? There's a sheet of ice on the sidewalk. It's sideways snowing right in your face. And you have that whole Antarctic getup on. You've got boots, big parka, two pairs of gloves, scarf, long undies, Vaseline on the face. That's how bad it is. And it doesn't feel like it's ever going to get better. Now, you got that vision in your mind? Now, open your eyes. Breathe. Shorts abound. So there you go. That's what I say to my son every morning. We're walking out and it gets nice. And when it's bad out in January, I go, just remember June 11th. And we get to June 11th or today, June 14th. And I go, oh, just remember January 23rd. Always flip it. Yeah. Sports, the Sox lost to the Indians today. The Sox just couldn't get the job done against the division leaders, but not a bad couple games. First, they took 2 of 3 in Boston. They came pretty close to taking this series against the Indians. The Sox actually have played pretty good baseball in the last couple weeks, moving up in the standings. What? They're no longer in last place. Do you see this? They're now a hair above the Royals. Yeah. And they're not even in the bottom three teams in the league anymore. Who is this team and what have you done to my White Sox? Dylan Covey and Ronaldo Lopez, the future. The Cubs were rolling until they ran into a couple of shutouts at the hands of the Brew Crew. At one point this week, they were in first place, but now find themselves a game and a half out, but that's fine. Here come the Cardinals this weekend. They got to go to, they still call Busch Stadium down there? They changed the name of that stadium. Is Whitey Herzog still the coach there? I don't know. Is Daryl Porter still playing first base? Yeah. He might have played like, he might have catch. He was a catcher. And then a Jack Clark was at first base. There's Will Clark from the Giants, but then there was Jack. Jack Clark's the OG Clark. Jack Clark. What a great baseball name. Jack Clark. There's a pop up to right field. Jack Clark. Clark 0-4. 2 strikeouts. It's a great baseball name. All right, where were we? The Bulls and the Hawks have the draft coming up. The Bulls allegedly are unhappy with Chris Dunn's offseason workouts, and they're looking to draft a new point guard. This, according to the Sun-Times. Trae Young, perhaps? Man, the Sun-Times and the Bulls, that's the real rivalry in Chicago. It seems personal, doesn't it? Remember with the D. Rose stuff and Joe Colley? Good reporting, but man, according to that paper, the Bulls are the most dysfunctional team in the history of sports, which is quite possible. No doubt about it, but geez. And today, the 20th anniversary of the Jordan push-off game that won the Bulls their sixth title. And the last time we saw Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, and Phil Jackson on the court in Chicago. So let that sit in you. 20 years. Rejected! Back to the Bulls today. Trae Young was at the Advocate Center for a workout. It was supposedly a great workout. This could be a viable choice in the draft. The Oklahoma standout says he fits really well with the Bulls, which means he can chuck threes and not get back on defense. But Young could be the next Steph Curry and the Bulls' only shot to have a player mentioned in a Drake song. So that's good. Markkanen, it just doesn't roll off the tongue. I'm a man among men. I'm hitting threes like I'm Lauri Markkanen. That could work. That's pretty good. Does that make me a ghostwriter? I'll take it. And finally tonight, this is our final carryout on the air. It's been a pleasure to make one of these every single night for you. I hope you enjoyed my half-ass attempts to both read you the news of the day and to make fun of it. I will continue to do them on the podcast, so if you want to kind of understand the news through rushed and mediocre jokes, well, Roe's still doing his show. No! Nailed it! Come on. I kidding. That's the carryout for June 14th, 2018. Hey, we're closing. We're putting all the leftover meat we have into one stew. So for $5, we'll give you a fork and you can just stab at what you want. You're welcome, Chicago. All right, coming up, Heather Sharone explains the bullet train, what we can expect. More political stories, 8 o'clock. Amara Enya and Mario Smith join me for our last reload. It's the final download tonight here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Record-breaking meat on Sunday?
Yeah.
I know, I am handing out the game ball at the White Sox game on Sunday, Father's Day. It's not throwing out the first pitch. I think it's my job to give the ball to the person who is throwing out the first pitch. It's very inefficient.
It's still an honor.
It's an honor. I'm honored to do that. I'm excited to do it. But yeah, now you tell me it's going to be record-breaking heat.
You're only going to have to be out there for 5 minutes to do that. Then you can go back in the press box or wherever.
That's true. I got to start looking into where's my skybox?
Right.
That's how they know me at Sox Park, because I'm the guy they right away, they're like, oh, this is the guy who always says, where's my skybox? Never been in a skybox here.
Make sure you rosin up your hands as you deliver. You don't want to be sweaty. You don't want to drop it.
Right.
As you deliver.
It's got to be, exactly. And Pete had the best idea ever to wear the full baseball uniform there, not just a jersey, but wear the pants with the stirrups like you're in Little League, the cleats. That would be awesome. Dedicated. That'd be commitment to handing a ball to an umpire.
And please take a picture.
Yeah. Well, if my phone doesn't melt.
Instagram some video.
There you go. Look at you with all the techno-lingo.
You're the popular one, so I'm like, I'm encouraging you. I'm trying to learn from you.
There you go. Well, it's a download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's time for the Daily Line. They join us usually on Wednesday nights to give us the latest on local, county, and state politics. But it's Thursday, and it's our final show, and we're reminiscent. We are already nostalgic for the segment. So we brought Heather Sharone, who's in managing editor at the Daily Line, which you can find at dailyline.net. Heather, great to see you.
Thank you for having me, Justin. It's an honor to be on your last show.
Well, I always enjoy talking to you and AD and the crew, because you give us such great specific insights to the things that matter to us here in the area. So let's get right to it.
Sure.
The bullet train obviously did in the headlines. The mayor and Elon Musk getting together and talking about this is on par with the reversing of the Chicago River when it comes to logistics and infrastructure projects in the history of this town.
There's nothing that gets Mayor Rahm Emanuel more excited than the ability to invoke Daniel Burnham's make no little plans for the city. And that, you know, I think is objectively true. It is not a small plan to, drill a tunnel all the way from O'Hare to the Loop and have it with automated 16-person cars speed at 100 miles per hour from O'Hare to downtown in, as promised, 12 minutes.
That sounds like it's going to be broken all the time. I'm just going to say, like, doesn't it? Like, automatically, as we know about trains and things, that there's going to be like, well, it's not working right. Or the slowdowns, there's going to be slowdowns like they do on the Blue Line. But this is a project that has been in the hearts, or at least in the minds of mayors of the past. Mayor Daley's talked about express trains. There has been a particular interest from the business community to be able to get the business traveler from O'Hare to downtown Chicago in a matter of minutes, because it's been asked. People are, I joked about it in the carryout. It's a longstanding, I guess, anger, frustration for travelers to take so long to get from the airport to downtown Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I saw a lot of commentary today about people who ride the Blue Line every day, like I do. I ride it from Cumberland, which is almost to O'Hare, and how slow it can be. And it's certainly, you know, when it's terrible, it's terrible. But when you compare to Chicago, to a city like New York, where you have to take multiple trains and multiple buses to get to Manhattan, Chicago is actually in a relatively good space. And let's not forget that we're in the midst of a $500 million renovation project for the Blue Line, which is ostensibly going to cut 10 minutes off the commute from O'Hare to downtown. So I think a lot of the questions we heard today was, why this project? Why here? And is the mayor setting up the city for sort of a financial boondoggle in the future?
And that's a great question, because obviously this is with Elon Musk's company. You're talking about private money, private industry. But we've seen this before, where there have been Millennium Park comes to mind as a good example of a park that was built on the backs of private foundation money. But over time, to actually keep it up, to make sure there aren't slow times, to make sure there aren't construction out of order signs, and it's going to take some sort of taxpayer money. Is that how critics see it? Is that how people are looking at this issue?
Well, I think the concern is that, you know, what happens if Elon Musk decides he wants to do something else? Let's say his company, the Boring Company, the technology isn't where he wants it. He's got many other companies, SpaceX. He's trying to go to Mars. Tesla, is in a lot of flux right now with their labor situation. This is really turning over a significant chunk of the city's infrastructure to a private firm. And anybody who remembers the parking meter deal, starts to twitch a little bit. I think a lot of the questions we heard from Alderman like Scott Wakes back, what happens if this goes wrong? And we don't really have any of those questions.
And that's a great question to ask, because there have been issues. The parking meter is a good example where we've seen that kind of go wrong. All right. So obviously, let's talk about time. I mean, this is obviously a big presentation about what it's going to be, but it's going to take a while to build something, to tunnel this. This is a tunnel. The cost of this project, who's paying for it, and how much it's going to end up costing the consumer.
Well, so it's not going to cost the city anything, the mayor says up front. Elon Musk is going to foot the bill, and he's going to get the revenue from the $20 or $25 fares. I think the bigger payoff for Elon Musk is being able to demonstrate that it works in a city, so that he could go to other cities and say, look what I did in Chicago. You should pay me all of your money, because I can do for you what I have done in Chicago. Elon Musk said today he thinks that drilling can start by Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And that once drilling starts, it could be up and running within 2 years, but definitely not more than 3 years. And I was thinking about the other day how we are still trying to reform the Chicago Police Department's officer misconduct system, which has literally been languishing committee for 2 years.
Right.
So he said today that Chicago was a great place to start this because there's very little regulatory sort of hang-ups. And I think a bunch of us reporters sort of looked at each other and went,
That's such a great point, Heather. The idea that this is evidence that the mayor can pick and choose about what doesn't have regulation and what does, or what gets hung up and what doesn't, to act as if you can snap your fingers and have a train go from O'Hare to, and a huge infrastructure project, but not snap your fingers on things that many citizens want, is peculiar.
The other issue is, and I saw this from a couple of people, the city is trying to get a massive amount of money from the federal government to extend the Red Line south to 130th Street. Because right now, you get off the Red Line at 95th Street,
it's
and
bus
that's
city, right?
pretty
right.
much it.
Right.
So that has been presented as sort of a transportation equity situation, issue on the south side. And there, State Rep Al Riley said today on Twitter that this announcement made him mad because, that in his mind is a much higher priority, because there's literally no train service there when, of course, you've got the Blue Line.
And obviously the one issue that critics talk to is that this is not for Chicagoans. This is for travelers and obviously a business community coming in from the coast that need to do business and get out of town quickly. And also there are projects, and texters are also texting in about fix the CT MBTA, the Blue Line. We saw this week with Metra that there are issues with the trains going out. So there are going to be a lot of questions about we can do this. Now, again, to the mayor's defense, this is a private project. This is not a project that uses taxpayer money. It remains to be seen if that'll be the case in the future. Heather Sharone, my guest, the managing editor at The Daily Line. TheDailyLine.net covers everything from Chicago to Cook County to Springfield. We'll talk Springfield, sexual harassment coming up here right after the break, so stay with us. A lot of great texts coming in. Engineers and tunnel contractors will tell you it's not simple. It's not a simple task to build a tunnel to O'Hare. Daunting. Another Texas A47 some rock excavation to soft clay and 14 miles long like a moonshot. It can be done, but will cost. 214 says, why can't visitors budget their time and figure out what it takes to travel to and from the airport? Why do we need it? Fix the Blue Line and environmental permits. Environmentalists will probably slow this project down. A lot of great questions unanswered, and we will continue to cover this and I agree with the mayor in the sense that this is an infrastructure project that is historic in proportion. An express train to the airport is something that Mayor Daley wanted to get done. Feels like a lot of politicians in the area, a lot of Springfield politicians have always talked about that kind of thing. So we'll see how this moves forward. Heather Sharone's here, the managing editor of DailyLine.net, joins us every Wednesday. She's here for our final program on Thursday to talk about all things city, county, and state. Let's talk state. Sexual harassment allegations continue in Springfield. We saw in the last week or so more inner circle people with Speaker Madigan as chief of staff. We saw a couple of the Democrat leaders. So the question here, he has come out and he has said we have a new plan. Everyone's going to reapply for their job. We're going to do so many different things to stem this. But there has been a rising tide of concern from critics and from others that say this issue may continue towards the election. Is that true? Do you feel that there could be voters out there that won't vote Democratic because of the man who runs the Democratic Party?
Well, the Illinois Republican Party is certainly hoping that they will. I don't think it was a by chance that the first bill that Governor Rauner signed after the budget deal was a bill that basically expands protections for people who report abuse and harassment in Springfield. And it changes a little bit the way that the Ethics Commission works and how you can report those complaints. His former Republican gubernatorial primary rival, Jeannie Ives, had a press conference here in Chicago last week that basically said, earlier this week, said if the Democrats don't dump Michael Madigan, they will be hypocrites, essentially. Because
the Tribune said that as well. The Democrats not lining up against the Speaker.
Yeah, and Jeannie Ives basically said that Michael Madigan is an albatross around the necks of the Democratic Party. She was greeted by polite skepticism from a lot of the reporters in the room who, you know, are well aware of just how much money Michael Madigan distributes to candidates and how closely he has held those reins of power for decades. The question is, does that Me Too movement sort of move votes in an election where everybody expects the Democrats to sort of surge along this anti-Trump feeling?
It obviously is a huge issue, and it's one that you're seeing a culture issue around the Speaker and the Speaker's office, because a lot of these people are being accused of doing this for years on end. But the question is, if the Speaker comes forward and suggests and institutes principled sweeping changes to how sexual harassment allegations are handled, to how they are dealt with in the public, everything down the line, is that enough for Democrat voters and Democrat leaders to say, well, the Speaker is stepping up? Because at the end of the day, the difference in the Me Too movement is this not about Speaker Madigan allegations against him. It's right. About people that are in his organization, a lot of which are trickle down in his organization.
I think a lot of attention will be paid as to who gets the nod to lead the Democratic Party of Illinois. Letitia Wallace, who was the lieutenant governor candidate with Daniel Bish, would like to lead the party. Elena Hampton, who brought the first allegation of harassment to closer to Madigan. She says she was harassed by the brother of Alderman Marty Quinn, who was close aide to Speaker Madigan. She'd also like to run. So, if the next leader is somebody who's always been close to Michael Madigan. I think a lot of people will object to that because they will say, hey, how can we change the culture if we're just basically shifting deck chairs on the Titanic? If it is somebody from outside, I think there will be people who will embrace that. However, you bring outside people in, that can complicate, you know, your sort of hold on power. And if, you know, Michael Madigan is about anything, he's about keeping, you know, himself at the top of the heap.
I think it'll start to play out. Of course, we are in the early parts of the summer. In the summer, a lot of the spotlight has been on the city's, you know, the municipal election and who's going to run for mayor against the incumbent. But there still is a general election, one that has been highly touted. I mean, we went through a primary season that was crazy to have J.B. Pritzker versus the incumbent Bruce Rauner. How is that playing out? Is this issue going to be one that is debated, that gets up on stage, that's going to be up there with health care and taxes and all the other things that are affecting the state of Illinois?
Well, it's just fascinating because Governor Rauner is up on the air now with several ads continuing to try to link J.B. Pritzker with Rod Blagojevich, who is, of course, back in the news because President Trump said he was considering pardoning him, which is really a case of strange bedfellows where you have a Republican governor sort of tagging his opponent by association with a man, the Republican president, who Governor Rauner said this week was doing a pretty good job and he had no complaints about, was going to pardon. So it's just strange. Now, Governor Rauner has spent months and months and months trying to make Michael Madigan the issue and tying J.B. Pritzker to Michael Madigan. Is he going to stop doing that anytime soon? I would not suspect so.
Well, it's going to be a great summer for the race, because I think you're going to see, hopefully they get off of the TV. They're not going to do that.
No.
I know that. But it's just like, yesterday I did see the Blagojevich tapes won again, and I'm like, don't recycle this stuff. Don't, we already did this.
I mean, that's hopefully an interesting point, because so much of that was aired during the primary to really no effect on J.B. Pritzker. He won handily. And so now do regular people see those ads every 6 seconds and say, what, we dealt with this. This is old news. And is Bruce Rauner throwing good money after bad? And is further complicated by President Trump saying, hey, he probably was mistreated. It's a really complicated situation.
It's so great for the state of Illinois, though, if you're a political observer or someone who's into politics. The campaign storylines are getting very interesting. The final thing is just really about the sale of the Thompson Center.
I love this story.
Yeah, the state budget counts this in it, right, as revenue. And there's question about what happens. Like, it's really, I mean, we've talked about the Thompson Center before in the sale, and both have made it a political issue. But this state budget actually says it will be sold in the next year. How is that possible?
Well, and not only will it be sold, but it will be sold for $270 million, which is a lot of money, even for a full city block in the heart of the Loop. And that sale price assumes that it's going to be replaced with a very tall, very dense office building with maybe even some residential component to it. So I asked both the mayor's office and Alderman Brendan Riley, hey, have you seen a new plan? Because nothing's going to happen unless the mayor and the city council sign off on it. And they have seen nothing. So there's essentially a $270 million hole in the state budget that everybody has said, yeah, no, that's going to actually happen, when there's no plan. And it's a really complicated site, because not only do preservationists want to keep the building, which is, you know, unusual for is probably the best thing you could say about it. But, underneath is the Clark and Lake L station, where, you know, literally tens of thousands of people move through every day. So if they're going to tear that building down, they have to do something to protect that station, to keep that station from running.
I just love it. I love the story the most, because once again, there's been so much question, but we got a budget done. Yay!
Yes.
And they were like, oh, page 14. We can get past page 14. And you start looking into this stuff and you're like, they haven't been able to sell this thing. So the idea that they're going to count on $270 million for income for the state of Illinois, when they haven't had success yet, is a head scratcher. Heather, love having you here.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you.
And we'll continue the conversations both on the morning and with the podcast. Heather Sharone, the managing editor at The Daily Line. You can find it at thedailyline.net. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Justin.
Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. is our final program tonight as we move to the Steve Cochran Show starting Monday. We'll be on with Steve tomorrow morning. Pete and I both are moving to Cochran Show. Andre Darlis and Patty Vasquez will be taking over the slot and working around the White Sox games and Blackhawks games, Northwestern basketball, that kind of stuff. But it's been a pleasure to helm this slot, 7 to 11 here at 720, for over 3 years now. And I'm excited because my next two guests have been with me the whole time, Mario Smith and Amara Enya. They are guests and regulars in our segment we do on Fridays, Reloading the News. That's the segment with the biggest story, with the winners, losers, all that kind of stuff. And they were gracious enough to come in on a Thursday, and Mario gracious enough to cross the bridge.
I did not cross the bridge. I took the bus.
Yeah. Mario has a fear of bridges.
I can't, after three I can't. Years, we can reveal that secret.
Oh, no, that's not really a secret.
Oh.
I can't cross. Ain't nothing happening.
What?
If it's a bridge, I won't cross it.
You won't cross it.
I used to work for the Chicago Sun-Times. I was a hard scrabble reporter during the night beat. No, I used to work with the Sun-Times, and I used to have to cross the bridge, and I did not have a problem. One night, it was a storm, an extremely windy storm.
You almost got blown
off. And
up.
I thought I was going to get blown off the bridge, and I was like, that's it.
That's
never
it?
Again. I will walk around Chicago to not cross a bridge.
Mario Smith, a poet, and commentator, a journalist, news from the service entrance, longtime program, both and one station we won't mention, and now on Lumpin.
Just celebrated 17 years last week.
Congratulations.
I'm one of the oldest broadcasters, not oldest, but one of the longest running shows in Chicago.
I love it.
I love it, too.
The last one you just did, you had mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot on.
We've had Pat McCarthy on.
Gary McCarthy?
What did I call him, Pat?
You called him Pat.
I'm thinking about FBI man, Pat McCarthy. We had Gary McCarthy on. We've had Troy LaRavier on. We just had Lori on. We've got Willie Wilson on.
We're trying to get mayoral candidates.
All 700 candidates, yeah. That's the plan.
By the time you get them on, the election will be
over. It'll be over, but it won't matter. It'll still be content.
And Amara Enya is here, longtime activist and educator, as well as a former mayoral candidate. I say former. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be current. We'll see. Amara Enya, welcome back to the show. Both of you, I mean, we always reload the news, which is always fun to do. And I thought tonight we'd do a little bit different as we wrap up the download. We've been on this program together several times. Kind of do a state of the state or a state of the city when we talk about what we think of the place we live here in 2018. As we talk about the biggest stories of the week, let's keep it to Chicago. Of course, the bullet train today, the mayor and Elon Musk on stage, we were just talking about this with Heather Sharon, talking about this being one of the largest infrastructure projects in the history of Chicago, up there with reversing the Chicago River. I mean, they're really talking about legacy and history and all the things that go into it. What's your first thought on the bullet train concept, the tunnel Elon Musk is bringing to Chicago?
All show, no substance, smoke and mirrors, big ticket item with no real way to pay for it, and the justification for it is questionable at best. I'm reminded of many of the things that have been unveiled close to election time, but just in general, that are designed to capture people's imaginations. But when it comes down to the details, there are very few details. The expense, I think we were told that it would cost privately funded. But we know how that goes, too. Just ask anyone who's hosted an Olympics what that looks like for taxpayers.
Right.
And then who this is for, and is it absolutely necessary, and are there other ways to address the transit issues that they're trying to address in a way that is much more cost effective and actually has a better economic impact for the city of Chicago.
We've seen, Mario, I've just a text alone in just the last segment talking about I'd rather have a plan to fix the blue line. And we saw in this last week Metro riders having all sorts of problems. Metro had to come out publicly and apologize. There are transportation issues. Heather was talking about the state rep on the south side who is angry that this project is being prioritized over an extension of the red line to 130th Street. So there's seems to be a lot of issues with transportation in the area, and there hasn't been a ton of local clamoring for an express train.
I don't think this will be our last time on WGN, so I'm just going to go ahead and go on out there on a limb. This is dumb. It's stupid. I haven't seen a Tesla on 79th and Stony Island yet, so I don't know what that bullet train is going to do for anybody that needs to take it, and why do you need it right now? It's the same thing with the Cop Academy. Okay, in principle, they do need a new place to train. That can't be disputed. But why would you go to this length? It's just like the Cop Academy. Why are you trying to build a bullet train in Chicago? We're not in Japan trying to get to the other side of the
world. I mean, I'll give him credit. I'll rep the mayor
Don't
here.
You always.
I always do, right. But I'll say, I mean, you want to be, make no small plans. You want to be big ticket things. This could be the future of transportation for many cities. This is an opportunity to show that Chicago is on par with the Tokyos and the other places around the world.
You can do that after you fix what you got.
Well, and that's very true. So ridership is down. On CTA, it is becoming increasingly expensive for public transportation across the board, whether on the buses or the trains. That needs to be addressed. Also, the quality of infrastructure for existing train systems need to be addressed. And also, this is catering to a particular kind of person that's coming into the city. And I argue that there are other ways that we can be innovative with transportation without spending inordinate amounts of money for a very small, very niche group of corporate or very wealthy business professionals. And quite frankly, when they tore up Meg's Field, this was under Daley, that was actually the mechanism for them to be able to fly in and effectively be downtown. Right. Now we did that, and now we're spending billions of dollars, presumably, on an underground, on this train system. And I just argue that it doesn't make sense at this time.
Open up a mental health facility. There's a novel idea. You closed all of those.
But I would argue that you should be doing both. I mean, can you be looking to the future and to being a player at the global stage to play to corporate interests? You're right. They're probably corporate business people who want to get to downtown in 12 minutes. I get that. But can you do that as well as serving the community that you've been elected to serve?
I think that you can. Unfortunately, I think that the city has not. It's always been one or the other. They're one over the other, and that's why you're seeing a lot of frustration with a lot of these things being rolled out. But we have to do a better job of being able to do both. We can do big ticket, we can do innovation, but we also have to take care of the nuts and bolts.
I think you can do big ticket and consider the people. You can do that. That's not impossible to do. That's what this city was built on. It considered the people when it was talking about the future, not just the rich white folks. It considered the people, and that's everybody. This city is brilliant because the forebearers of it had an idea, right? And that idea was sound. It may have been built upon some weirdness, but it was a sound idea. You want to build a bullet train, and that's great. That man, hey, go right to the Museum of Science and Industry with that idea for a bullet train. That's fantastic. The problem is I see people every day asking for money on this in this city for everything. For schools, for jobs, for community, for everything. There are so many needs that could be immediately addressed by an Elon Musk that would have an impact, real impact instantly. Instead of just going, you know what, Mayor Emanuel, I'm going to give you this big Chicago flag. He finds the biggest Chicago flags for everything he announces. I want one of those big ass flags. Can I get one of those big Chicago flags? I've been here my whole life.
Yeah, right.
Yes, every flag is like super big. I saw them fold. I'm like, God, that's another one.
That's a huge flag.
That's a really big Chicago flag.
Mario Smith of Mario Enya in studio tonight. We're talking about the state of the city and the area and the news that came out today about the bullet train. We'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download, 720 WGN. Amara Enya and Mario Smith in studio. Talking about some of the state of the state, state of the city.
It's a great night, baby. Just the last one.
The last download here on 720 WGN. We will be moving to podcast, but we also will be, Pete and I will be moving to the Steve Cochran Show starting on Monday permanently.
I'm doing the farm report. I'm taking Orion Samuelson's place.
That's right. That's right.
Hi, everyone, to the farm report. Yeah. I can do it.
You can do it.
I'm ready.
That's right. All right. Another question that always, you know, we've reloaded the news. We've talked about what the big stories are, winners, losers, that kind of stuff. And you guys have always been great on that. But as we talk about, as we wrap up this segment, and this being the last one, the other big ticket question that continues to come up in the state of Illinois is why people are leaving. And everybody seems to have, and this is the city of Chicago as well, we've seen population decreases over time. Many people, depending on your political affiliation, will use it as a way to blame the other party or talk about taxes and money and this has to change, whatnot. But I feel like there's a conversation to be had because the Cranes came out with an article early in the week, and I think they were saying that their survey said it's not about taxes, that people are moving for inequality issues, meaning, you know, poverty and other places. Obviously, money and finances play into that. But well, let's talk about this question. Why do you think people are leaving the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois?
Because it costs $1 billion to live in Chicago.
It costs a billion dollars to live everywhere.
Yeah, but I mean, the cost of living in Chicago is way higher than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
It costs money. I mean, you know, God bless Hyde Park, but Jesus Christ, it's expensive. State tax, city tax, sales tax. Walgreens, for example, has a Walgreens tax of some sort. Because every time I go there for one thing, I end up spending $1 million for just one thing. I think quality of life. I think a lot of it is fear based, and people are like, I got to get out of here. I don't want anything to happen to me. I think schools. I think the political climate in Chicago, which is not, which doesn't adhere itself to the people who do the voting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are multiple factors. I think primarily it just costs so much to live here. If you have a family of three and you're trying to buy a house in Chicago, you can hang it up.
Yeah, you can't do it.
It's definitely the quality of life, I think. I think it's hard for people to envision a future here. And as people get older and maybe they're getting settled, they're thinking about where they can buy a home, where they can go to school, where they can find work. And they're not seeing that in Chicago nor in the state of Illinois.
Okay, Amara, but I will play. I love when you guys come in.
Devil's advocate.
But that's always been the case, right? That's always in the 25 plus years that I've been in the area. That's always been when you get to a certain age and you have kids and you start thinking about schools, that you go to the suburbs or you possibly leave the state to somewhere else. That doesn't seem to fit the narrative of why there has been a higher percentage of people that are leaving the state.
I definitely think it is. So in the last 8 years alone, we have seen families and households paying over $1,000 more just in fees and fines and forfeitures to the city alone. If we're talking about Chicago, that's right, a significant hit for your average family or an individual. We have higher incidences of people actually filing bankruptcy. There is a whole cottage industry of people filing for bankruptcy because they got tickets from the city of Chicago.
Yep.
That is a huge problem that we're seeing that
it's
a recent development. We're also seeing the 250,000 fewer black people that live in the city over 15 years. That is significant. What it means is that if you match that up to where schools were closed, if you match that up to where getting access to some of the selective enrollment schools and the fact that you practically have to be in Hunger Games to get your child into a quality school. You cannot get into a quality school in your neighborhood. So what is the incentive to stay? If you also look at the patterns for where jobs were created, what we're finding is that the city of Chicago is becoming younger, whiter, and more affluent. The jobs that are coming here are, when they bring these headquarters, they're not going to actual residents. It is people who are moving into the city to work for those companies. So the net benefit of the jobs is not happening here either.
So when a corporation gets wooed to Chicago by the mayor, and we've seen them in the West Loop with Google and McDonald's,
precisely,
it's not that they're hiring people from Chicago. They're wooing people of affluence.
They basically just tell those people that are working for them already, you're moving Chicago.
Right. So we don't benefit from that. Yeah. And we're seeing that at higher rates as well. And the fact that we are now in a race for third place, we're competing with Houston, which is poised to overtake us in population. That's a significant development that's just happened in the last few years. And I think it's very telling about the confluence of policies, quality of life issues that people are experiencing that is leading to this exodus, where we're number one, I think, in the country as far as the city and even the state in terms of people moving out.
I wonder how much long-term forecasting plays into it. I mean, we've seen so much at the political side of the state of Illinois when it comes to pensions and it comes to balancing budgets, and people want to put all of the exodus on that in the moment. But I wonder if I'm a resident in Chicago, which I am, and I look and I go, man, this state does not look good in 15 to 20 years. Like, in 20 years, they're going to make me pay. When those stats come out and say, you owe $11,000 for pensions, each person in the state, you're like, I might want to get out before my check is due or my bill is due.
Mm-hmm.
Is some of it the long-term prognosis of what we see in the state of
Illinois? I think a lot of it actually is. I think the dysfunction, not having a budget for 3 years, played a role in how people see their future in the state. The fact that we still have a structural deficit of $6.6 billion that has not been addressed at all, even the most recent budget that they passed, shows people that problems are not getting fixed. They're being kicked down to the next group of politicians who will be equally as dysfunctional. And people see that. And if you're a business owner or someone who wants to start something in the state, you're looking at that dysfunction and saying, maybe that's not a good investment.
Right. And you know, what besides summer, what is the incentive of living here?
Well, arts?
Of course, no. I don't mean to sound like it sounds, but I'm just saying Chicago winters notoriously, although the last few years have not been as brutal, are brutal. Brutal. It's hard to live here in the winter time.
We just finished winter last week.
That's what I'm saying. So if I know I could go, although I'm not, if I know I can go somewhere warm and it's not going to cost as much as it costs to live here, I'm out.
Yeah.
And especially if I have a family.
But there's culture, and there's history, and there's arts, and there's the idea that you can walk out and you can be inspired by the surroundings. The fact that you live in a world-class city and you are able to partake in some of the things that are you know, top 10 in the entire Earth.
And those are precisely the reasons why I won't leave, man. Not to cut you off. Right. That's why I'm still here. Right. I could have taken the whole poetry thing, I imagine, after I fixed it and got it better and moved to New York City. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Right. If the world would have been different for me, I would have moved to Seattle actually at 2001. That was the plan. I was leaving. And then radio happened. And my knowledge of what was already happening, I'm like, man, why would I go anywhere else? For me, this is the best place for me. I can see me living in other places, most definitely, without question. But for my spirit, for me, it's Chicago. For better or for worse, this is going to be where it is.
I've known you for 20 plus years, and I can't see you anywhere but here. I really can't. Spots. I mean, you got a couple of spots. Mario Smith, Amara Enya in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get Pam's news, and we will continue our conversation, the state of the state, state of the city here with Amara and Mario on the download. Stay with us. Downloads 720 WGN. I'm Justin Cobbin with you till 11 o'clock tonight. In studio, Amara Enya and Mario Smith. We're talking about the state of Chicago and the state of Illinois. This is the final episode of the download. Wow. We have done this show for 3 years, and it's kind of funny because we started in April of 2015, but we really didn't start to write about now. It's coincidental in the fact that I think we're looking at stuff. The Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup in June of 2015. Yeah, so when they were done, that's when the download took over. Yes, and it's just really interesting to look at some of the old archives and say, oh, that was 3 years ago to the date. I mean, that's right here.
We've been on here a lot.
Yeah, and Mario and Amara have both been frequent guests on the program. And as we close the program, we talk tonight about the state and the state of Chicago and some of the things we've talked about a lot in this program. You know, as we talked about why people are leaving, and this is a conversation that's playing out in media, it's playing out in neighborhoods, it's playing out, you know, person to person in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois. We tried to look at some of the big issues, and we obviously talked about politics, and we talked about money and quality of life. One of the other issues is reputation. This has come up, and this came up in the Cochran Show segment we did this week with someone in real estate who said the real estate market is being affected by the negative reputation of the city of Chicago and the country. Obviously, this all stems around the issue of violence. Mm. We've talked about this a lot in our program. Where are we with this issue? Is this something that is top of priority for the city of Chicago? Is it something that many are recognizing might just be how life is in a big city because it's in proportion with some of the other cities? Or have we not done enough as a society to deal with this issue, which is now permeated to giving us negative reputation in the country?
Well, I think the negative world. Reputation really around the world, I mean, this is something that even traveling outside of the United States, when they think about Chicago, it used to be in years past when I traveled outside of the United States, it was Barack Obama and Michael Jordan. Later on, it became, oh, where do you live? Or you're in Chicago, like how dangerous that city is. And that's a marked difference from the reputation we used to have. But I think that we still have not done enough to address the issue. And I'm saying that because this past week we had, actually the last couple of weeks, there were stories of women on the west side of Chicago in particular who were either disappearing, kidnapped, or found dead. And the fact that did not raise to the level of awareness either with the media or with the police department until a social media blitz of people just saying, well, what in the world is going on? There are women that are missing. We have to do something about it. And they started to organize themselves to try to do something to protect women in particular in our communities. And I think that is speaking to the fact that on many of the issues related to violence, there is still the sense that not enough is being done, that the city has not put the effort into addressing the root causes of violence and it still has really has really not improved at all on the issue, especially when you compare the numbers today to the numbers 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 8 years ago.
It's funny, too. If that would have been on Michigan Avenue that people would have been getting snatched up, I am I'm so sure it's bucket number six for me. I'm sure of it. They would have done something by now. Someone would have been caught. There's cameras everywhere in Chicago. We're almost like London, where London is a CCTV city. Chicago's getting real close to being just that, where you can see something if you want to see it. The girls that were or are being preyed upon, that's a big deal. And it's like it took people to go on social media to draw the attention of news reporters who don't know how to do their job. Because they do their job based on social media. And, well, and then when you see that, you're like, wow. So it took people to sacrifice a post, if you will, to get the attention of people who actually report the news to say, hey, there's something going on and it's newsworthy. Yeah. I just wonder, though, if these tables were different and if these things were in different parts of the city, not necessarily west or south, but maybe north. Northwest, even if this is happening in another community that may be a little bit more politically rooted, is this
it's no longer then? It's no longer a theory. I mean, that's
a fact.
That's fact when it comes to Chicago, that there are issues that happen primarily in the west and south sides of Chicago that don't get accurately, you know, reported as they would in other affluent neighborhoods.
Right.
Here's a question I have, though. Is it fatigue? Is it media fatigue? Because the media loves at 10 o'clock. They love that kind of story. Who got shot, when they got shot, they got the reporter in front of the hospital. They love, they have sunk their teeth. People are watching that. Why do you think it is that they're missing this story?
I think part of it is just the desensitization and the fact that you can easily ignore parts of the city and say, well, that's their problem. It's until it hits downtown. So, for example, when the police commander was killed, or when there was another...
Or when the kids come downtown
and they
break a window or things like
that. Exactly. Yeah. Now you see the swarming of police.
And that's a three-day story. Right.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's a huge story. But as long as it's relegated to the neighborhoods that the city doesn't value as much, then it becomes an afterthought. And I think we're at the stage where, unless it's something egregious, but even in this case, I mean, these cases were egregious, and it took until, yesterday or today for CPD to do a press conference basically saying, everyone calm down. It's not what they're saying it is. Instead of saying, we need to support communities who are looking out for themselves, and here's how we plan to do that.
Right.
And it's that kind of response that further, to me, leads to distrust and a sense that the city doesn't actually care.
Well, that's well said.
Agreed.
Because you could make the argument that the police have the right, and they could be right in the sense that it's not what's being said or portrayed on social media. But the best way to actually communicate that or to have a dialogue with the community that's being affected is to show more empathy.
Exactly.
to be in a position where you're like, hey, this is a terrible thing that's happening, where women or young girls are being kidnapped, and it's not as if being called out on social media, let's work together to figure it out. But you're right, the tone sometimes makes it seem like the community's at fault for even being concerned about it.
Exactly.
Or for them to even poo-poo it when they hear it, like, there we go again. You know, that you may want to listen. You may want to just take a couple of seconds and go, well, what are you talking about? Let's investigate that. It's worth looking into if you think there's a problem. That's how it's supposed to work. The fact of the matter is, in this city, it doesn't work that way. And it really doesn't work that way if you live south or west of where we are.
All right. So what I find interesting is that we are at a crossroads when it comes to what can be done about violence, because I mean, this is not a new problem for the city of Chicago. Let's be frank about it. You look at the numbers. I remember looking at the documentary on Benji Wilson.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the numbers that were thrown out about violence and gun related homicides in 1984, whenever that was, were higher than they are now. This is not a new problem for the city of Chicago. There are many calls for the mayor and for the city to look systemic and try to look at the root causes of what violence is, as well as trying to take on crime. What do you do in this case? Because obviously capitalism plays a big role in our society. We're seeing that the haves and the have-nots. We've talked about, you know, people leaving the city. We talked about people can't afford the quality of life. There are so many contrasting, complicated factors that go into it. There's not a one-cut, one type of solution. How do you do this? How do you get this number to go away?
Well, the reality is that some cities have gotten the numbers to go down. And so part of it is looking at best practices. And part of it is exhibiting the political will to actually address the root causes in a meaningful way. Typically, when we talk about violence, we talk about policing, and the two are not the same.
Right.
Policing is not the same as violence prevention. Violence prevention involves a host of different policy areas, primarily being economic investment. So where have we invested in the economies outside of the central business district? How are we preparing people to have options when they finish high school, meaning investments in education to where you can get a quality education regardless of where you live in the city? One thing that we don't really talk about is the public health environmental hazards that contribute to the kind of biological
lead in the water,
precisely
lead
in the water. There's contaminated manganese contamination in the southeast side right now.
Yes.
These are huge issues that do have an effect on development, on behavior, and feed into violence. So if we're going to address violence, we have to have the will to address the root causes, and understanding that yes, it's slower, but it actually works. All that we've been doing around 1,000 more police and this press conference and that press conference, fudging the numbers to present an air of success, has not done us any favors.
And it goes right back to that doggone bullet train.
Right?
All roads lead to the shiny object that makes you forget about your woes and troubles. Mm. That bullet train, that press conference today was egregious. There are people in Chicago hurting tonight that are hearing our voices that need real help, and they're never going to get it because that ain't selling. That doesn't make people come to Chicago and spend money. Being a decent human being apparently has fallen by the wayside.
And
now
the reality is that you can do both.
You can do both.
You can make this a great city for everyone who's currently here, and it would make it even more attractive and more of a destination point. Because quite frankly, if folks aren't coming here because they believe that it's violent, we're still losing money.
There you
so
go.
By addressing our root issues, we actually make this a better destination for folks who want to come and enjoy Chicago for all the great things.
Make
it
an economic issue. You're right.
Why not? You're not losing if you do right. That is the people we have been twisted in our minds so much in the last few decades that we celebrate mediocrity and applaud stupid. All you gotta do is make it right. Make it so that everybody that is walking down the street feels like they can do it without feeling like somebody's going to try to rob them or hurt them. If they have a problem, they can go somewhere and get it addressed. We have so many opportunities to just do right, not do spectacular or amazing or unbelievable. Just do right by the people.
When we come back, we'll wrap it up here, and we'll talk about what the good things are that are happening in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago. We don't have to all
be
bad.
Giant flags.
Giant flags. That's the first thing.
I think
giant
that's
flags.
What we do first.
Good things. Giant flags. Amara and Mario Smith in studio. Stay with us. Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, Jack Silverstein's going to join us. We're going to talk about the 98 Bulls. This is the 20th anniversary of the big push-off game.
Oh, man. What? He didn't push him.
He didn't push
him. Oh, yes, he did push him.
He did.
He almost pushed him into the stands.
Amazing, if you think about it. Tonight would be, with all the celebration and everything, is the last time that Chicago had on the court, Jordan, Pippen, Rodman, Phil Jackson, all those guys. This is it. Because after this, it was over, and Tim Floyd came in, and we have still been chasing that feel.
Me and my friend Jay Love, United Center, they opened it that night. We watched the game from the United Center.
Did you?
Right in front of the already existing banners.
That's amazing.
And watch the game. Yeah, that was
great. That's great. Watching the playoffs this year, it's so hard.
Oh, God.
They're just like, the Bulls are not even, there's not even a whiff of them.
I know we're not talking sports. 6 seconds. Boy, oh boy, it's hard being a sports fan in Chicago these days. If you're a White Sox fan.
I'm a White Sox guy, but the Cubs
are good.
Quietly. The year that they won the World Series, it was not quiet. It was from the get-go. You're like, this is it. That could be
you
it.
You knew it when it started.
I think it was on ESPN Sports Center last night. They were talking about odds and who's on favorites, and they have the Nationals and the Cubs coming out of the NL. So I'm just saying that's a possibility. The Cubs are very riding low right now.
But you know what? I'm going to stick with my boys.
I know. You're on the flagship of the White Sox.
That's right, I am. By the way, White Sox, I love you. And I love going to your games.
Jack's got also Where Are They Now on all 15 of the 98
books. Oh, nice.
Where's Randy Brown?
That was a good time.
It was.
That was a good time. That was a really good time.
And it also points to, as we wrap up this segment, it points to what's good about Chicago. I mean, obviously sports, and that's trivial in some ways, but it's not, because the memories that were forged for everyone who lived in Chicago for the six champions and the Chicago Bulls. What's good about Chicago right now? There is a reason to move here. There's a reason to stay here. We kind of talked about the art and architecture and just the... the idea of being in the presence of a place that has global impact. What do you see that is good and positive about the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago right now?
That's a lot. I'm just kidding.
That's hilarious.
I can't say much about the state of Illinois, but definitely, I mean, Chicago is, it really is an amazing city. And the things that I most enjoy about it are actually in the neighborhoods. It is the park system, which sounds mundane, but it is the fact that we have some of the most amazing parks and green spaces in the city. It is the arts community here. It's the fact that you can really make something here. You can build something in this city. And that is something that you cannot do, I don't think, as well in a New York or in an LA, and definitely not in Houston. No offense, Houston. But that's the things that you can do in the city of Chicago. I mean,
that's a great point.
Yeah.
You can build stuff. You can build communities. You can build movements.
You can build institutions.
Build buildings. Yeah, you can do a lot of things here, but you're right.
I think this is what's good about Chicago. I think seeing people just walk past this window, they don't know us from the man on the moon. And if they do, they know you. They don't know us. and the people that come here and end up staying and building, one of the best things about Chicago to me, it's not a plug for Block Party. That's July 21st.
Yeah, that's
in Hyde Park.
No, I put that on my list.
It's Eric Williams moving Silver Room, or starting Silver Room, and then moving it from Wicker Park to Hyde Park. It's that, and then building that community, or helping to build that community. It's the people, man. The people have always been what makes Chicago great. Yeah. There's nothing like being here
You appreciate it when you go to other cities.
Other places, yes.
Like when you go to other cities. I can't tell you the number of times I've gone to other... So I flew... I hate to keep knocking Houston.
Oh, God, why?
But I flew into Houston...
I love this angle.
...and tried to get out of the airport, and there was no chance. I almost got back on the plane and said, take me back to Chicago. Like, it's things... The little things like that. Like, our public transit system is not the best, but at least we have one, right? You can actually get around the city. Like,
well, I will say the state of Illinois also plays in. Obviously, I love seeing how the different suburbs and towns and municipalities in this area have evolved over the last, you know, my lifetime. It's amazing. We'll go there with WG in different places and to see that. I went to Springfield last week for a field trip, and I recognized not just the Illinois history, but the American history that's on display there. To think about Springfield and its place with Lincoln and everything, I mean, it's really, really moved me in the way to say there is so much here that we just take for granted.
The fact that the
man Abraham Lincoln, is his body is in a tomb in a random cemetery in Springfield, Illinois. I love it.
Of the other things, and it bears repeating, like right now down the street from here, Orbert Davis.
Love Orbert Davis.
Is doing something with the Chicago Philharmonic Jazz Orchestra. It's some of the greatest musicians, writers, poets, singers, intellects live here currently, not used to live here, and that's the case. But I mean, like, live here now and are contributing mightily to what's going on in the city. And it's a shame that the blood and guts gets all the glory in our town. But man, there's some great people of every ethnicity in this city working hard to keep the city bumping.
I'll give you a plug. It's funny because it's been 20 plus years I've known you as a poet and really someone who's at the forefront of the spoken word scene here in Chicago. To see the video this week of Chance at the Harold Washington Library, for him to bring Childish Gambino up on stage to watch the kids rush the stage, there's a sense and pride of being a part of that, to be a microphone for that, to amplify that. I just feel like that honors you, that honors everybody who believes in Chicago seeing that video.
All I could think of was Brother Mike.
Yeah. Right? There you go. That was his dream.
Yeah. Right? And Chance was his guy, but I couldn't think of anything else but Mike.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you guys enough. The texters have texted as well. You know, they said... fresh water. That's what makes Chicago great. Well, we got that. That's all. We always got that going, no matter how bad it gets.
Yes.
Amara Enya, Mario Smith, the regulars here on the download as the show wraps up. I can't thank you guys enough.
Thank you.
We look forward to more conversations, both on the podcast and in the morning here
at WGN. We're not fired?
You're not fired. And obviously, Amara will be looking forward to seeing what your next political move is.
Yes, indeed.
We won't put you on the spot, but we hope to get an answer soon.
Oh, I'll put you on the spot.
You'll get an answer before most.
Oh.
Good, good.
Oh, why you look at me like that? I didn't do anything wrong. I just, you know. Jeez. Okay.
All right. So thanks, you guys. Thanks
thank
so much
you.
For
thank
coming
you. Thank
in.
You for the opportunity. Bro.
And coming up, we'll talk 20th anniversary of the Chicago Bulls, so stay with us. Is this the first time we played this song in the history of the download? Beats by Zim right at the end. There's a fascinating story in Chicago Magazine. And it's about, it's from our buddy Jack Silverstein, Chicago historian. This is for the June issue, but it's about the 20th anniversary of the 98 Bulls. Jack, of course, a longtime regular contributor to the download. He's been on talking about the Bulls and talking about sports, and we've talked about the first three-peat and a little bit about the second three-peat. But this week being the 20th anniversary of that famed series win championship in 1998, the 97-98 Bulls. Of course, Jack is a historian and author of How the GOAT Was Built, Six Life Lessons from the 96 Chicago Bulls. And we're talking about the 98 Bulls tonight. Jack, thanks for joining us, bud.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for having me, and thanks for having me on this historic night for the download.
Historic. Well, I mean, the historic night is 20 years since the Chicago
20 years
Bulls.
Ago.
It's amazing to think about Game 6, of course, and I call it the push-off game, even though I do that just to stir up the memories. Just to get us up to speed, this...
You just stir up trouble? Is that
yeah,
what you're
I think that's it's just a way for me to stir up trouble. But the of course, the Bulls beat the Utah Jazz. That amazing article in Chicago Magazine just breaking down what was happening with this team at the end of this run. Talk about how much went into it, when it's the fatigue and how much Jordan was playing and what they said in different articles. A tremendous achievement to put this article together. But it really did show how much was at stake for the Chicago Bulls in this series.
Yeah, it was really weird. I mean, there have been instances in NBA history where you knew someone was going to retire. They knew that Bill Russell, for example, in 1969 was playing his final game, but it was just one guy, and he was 13th season, and he was retiring. There is nothing in NBA history, and I can't think of anything in sports history, where you had such a dominant team, they're playing for a championship, but at the same time, everybody knows that there is a very good chance that this team will be completely broken down and dismantled. Basically, as soon as I was at the final Bears game at Soldier Field, the playoff game against the Eagles, and it was like after they lost that game, everyone knew that the stadium was about to be torn down.
Right.
And that was what it felt like in 98, with the exception of obviously that the Bulls won. But it was like you're watching this team, you're wrapped up in the moment, you want them to win the championship, and at the same time, you're like, I can't believe that this is probably it. Phil Jackson was on the record that day of saying, yeah, that's it. I mean, he was like, I've already cleaned out my office. Jerry Krause wouldn't give a straight answer about who's he going to bring back. He was just like, well, there's just a lot that has to happen over the summer. We have to look at the draft, and then there might be a lockout. And it's like, man, he's not even faking it. Like that's where they were.
Well, thinking back to my own memories of that time, and I think a lot of people listening are doing the same, you remember kind of being psyched out a little bit because the year before there was question because Jordan was a free agent. He got that $40-plus million contract, and Pippen was talking about retiring or moving on. Jackson, we weren't sure if he was coming back. Rodman, we already had gone through this dance the year before, so we weren't even sure if this was real or what was happening. There was just a lot of cloudiness around the future of the Bulls.
Yeah, so at the end of 96, Jordan's contract expired, Phil's contract expired, and that set off this year-by-year experience because Scottie's contract wasn't up until 98. And Dennis came up also after 97. Michael, Scott, and Phil signed one-year deals. Michael told Spike Lee that he was 30 minutes away in the summer of 96 from signing with the Knicks if the Bulls hadn't come correct. So after each year, they were re-signing all these guys. But the big key was that after 98, Scottie was a free agent as well. So after 97, remember Steve Kerr hit the shot to beat the Jazz in 97. And then the next play when Utah had the ball, Tony was guarding the inbounder. They threw it, and Scottie dove in this incredible defensive play. He dives on the floor, knocks away the ball, bats it over to Kukoc. Kukoc grabs it and dunks it. That's actually the final points of 97, not Steve Kerr's shot. And 11 days later, the Bulls tried to trade Pippen to the Celtics for a package of draft picks. And then this became more of a discussion, I don't know, like last year when Tracy McGrady was going into the Hall of Fame and he and Scottie do TV together. And Tracy was the guy who Jerry Krause really wanted to get. Jordan and Phil squashed that, and that was right around the time when Jerry Krause started wooing Tim Floyd from Iowa State. Yeah, and another weird piece that people another weird piece that people kind of forget after 98, after the 98 title, Phil left, so he didn't have a contract. Jordan wasn't under contract. Pippen wasn't under contract. Dennis wasn't under contract, and then there were. Let's see, there were 10 players total, I think, whose contracts had expired. It was bizarre. So they hired Tim Floyd as director of basketball operations prior to actually saying whether or not Phil was going to be back.
What a way to do this. I mean, it's funny to think about because Gar Forman and John Paxson kind of did the same thing with Hoiberg. We saw that a little bit where they seemed to already know who they were interested in beforehand. All right, here's what we'll do, Jack. Let's take a quick break so we stay on time tonight and continue the conversation because I want to also go through where are they now, the players of the 98 Bulls. But as much of this is a 20th anniversary of the Bulls winning the 98 season and their sixth championship, it's also a 20th anniversary of Tim Floyd and the continuing decisions that were made with this organization up to this point in the draft coming up next week. Jack Silverstein, sports historian and author on the line tonight as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Bulls' victory over the Utah Jazz in 1998. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us. Emotional about the last download, but there's no emotion that even comes close, right? It doesn't even come close to hearing this song when Jordan and the Bulls were playing. They still play this song, Jack, right, at the United Center?
I've
seen versions of it, but yeah, if they're going to use this singing, and now, Robin Lopez, you're like, yeah, okay. It's not as strong when they get to the past Dennis Rodman, yeah. Jack Silverstein, sports historian and author of How the Goat Was Built, Six Life Lessons from the 96 Chicago Bulls. Tonight, the 20th anniversary of the final Chicago Bulls championship of the six-peat, if you will, six in three parts, two parts, three different times. One thing I wanted to add, as we're going back and forth on email, I love this. Casey Johnson did a little bit of this as well, but it also has to do with where these players are now. I mean, we kind of know with Jordan of course, is the owner of the Charlotte Hornets. Scottie Pippen, I see him on the jump on ESPN all the time. It's kind of fun, but I'm also like, Scottie, come on. I always want them to make a bigger deal that they have Scottie Pippen on that program. They'll have a bunch of different stars.
It should be a much bigger deal.
Yeah, right? Dennis Rodman, we just saw in the news this week in North Korea. But let's get to some of the other guys. Let's start with Ron Harper. Where's Ron Harper?
Ron Harper is just sort of heavy on social media. I haven't been able to find anything specific about him, but he is all over. He tweets, he Instagrams. He's just kind of around the game.
Yeah, maybe he should go to North Korea next time. He's such a prolific social media guy. Luke Longley.
Luke Longley is living a low-key life in Australia. He was doing some coaching. There was a nice feature written about him in the Ringer in the past 6 months, and he's just taking it very low-key.
Okay. Of course, we see this next player a little bit. My biggest claim to fame, you know, we all have our stories about, and I'd love to hear yours, 312-981-7200. Your interaction with the 98 Bulls, they were celebrities before there was social media. You'd always see Jordan, stories of Jordan rolling into clubs downtown, and Pippen and Rodman, of course, with his famed hanging out the Crowbar, things like that. But I got to see Tony Kukoc at 900 North Michigan one time, where I was going in because I think I had an eye doctor or some lens crafter in there. And he was in there with his sweatpants. I think he lived in the building, but he was with his lady. It was a classic move, man, to see Tony out of outfit. But I'll never forget that. Tony Kukoc, where's Tony?
Yeah, he is a special advisor to Michael Reinsdorf. He's held this position since 2015. It's like an ambassador role. Pippen had the same title. Pippen's still in an ambassador role and doing ESPN. So we know that the Bulls are very loyal. You noted right before we went to the break that there is still some repercussions from the Tim Floyd days. And I want all Bulls fans to take note that on August 1st of this year, Gar Forman celebrates his 20th anniversary in the Chicago Bulls organization. He was a Tim Floyd hire who came over from Iowa State.
Wow.
So they're very loyal. Tony is in the organization. Horace Grant is in the organization. BJ Armstrong was previously in the organization. Bill Wennington is currently announcing. He's been in the organization. John Paxson has been in the organization since he was acquired from the Spurs in 1985. He's been a player, an announcer, an assistant coach, an announcer, and then in the front office since 2003.
I forgot about the announcing, right. Steve Kerr, we know because, he won another championship with the
Warriors.
You just mentioned Bill Wennington, who we know has been an announcer in Chicago for a while, but he's changing roles in some form? He's still going to announce, but I'm just saying that he's also now, you said he's a ambassador of some sort.
No, I don't believe that's... I would have to double check that, but no, I believe he's just an announcer. Doing a great job.
Let's get to some of the ones we really want to know about. Judd Bushler. Where's Bushler?
Judd Bushler. Yeah, so Judd Bushler just last week moved over to the Knicks staff. He was an assistant coach with the Lakers, and he just joined the Knicks staff on June 7th, so he'll be going over with David Frizzell's staff.
Judd, in charge of the big men? Is that what you said?
It is, yeah. I know, but that's what he's doing with those volleyball hops. Randy Brown, we know,
Randy,
is an coach of the Bulls. Randy's an assistant coach of the Bulls. Some would say controversially so. Scott Burrell, who played just that one season with the Bulls in 98. He was, yeah. He is the head basketball coach at Southern Connecticut.
Okay. All right. And then Dickie Simpkins.
So in 98, there was some question about who would get the 12th postseason roster spot. Because remember, it used to just be 12, and then the other guys were just IR. They were just left off the roster. So it ended up being Dickie, and he is an analyst for FS1. He recently celebrated a birthday on April 7th, and his Twitter account shows him doing some karaoke.
The players that are no longer with the team, I was thinking about the
Who else we got? Oh no. So we had three guys who weren't on the playoff roster but are on the championship banner. Well, they were on the team. Keith Booth was a rookie, and he is an assistant coach at Loyola of Maryland.
Okay.
Busty LaRue was also a rookie. He did some coaching and is now COO of Dario Restaurants, COO as of March 18th, but was working for the company for a while. They specialize in hot dogs. And you might remember Joe Klein, the center who earned the nickname Taco Joe when he hit some free throws to put the Bulls up 100 points to win the home crowd free tacos.
Always a crowd
Taco
favorite.
Taco Joe. Always a crowd favorite. Taco Joe is co-owner of Corky's Ribs and Barbecue with 8 locations in 3 states. And he is located in Little Rock, Arkansas.
All right, there you go. The guy I was thinking about was Bison DeLay, right? The wasn't he the R- changed his R- name R- and he died in a mysterious way, didn't he? Like on a boat or something. But he was on the 98 Bulls, wasn't he? It's a big.
He was on the 97 Bulls.
Was he? Was gone by then. He had such an impact on that team. He was good for the time they had.
Yeah, so they had some injuries. Bill Wennington went out for the season late in the year. Dennis was missing some time. And they signed Brian Williams, and he came in at the end of the year, and he did. He played really well. They knew that they were not going to be able to keep him because of salary reasons. He went, he signed a huge deal with the Pistons,
right.
And he played well, and then he changed his name, and then he retired, and he took up a life of the sea, and he died mysteriously at sea, but it's been definitively proven. But it is assumed that he was murdered at sea by his brother, who then died like 8 days later.
Yeah, I remember that Dateline story. That was terrible.
Yeah.
But that's why you're the historian, man, giving us all the Bulls facts. You know, like for obviously with the LeBron James, Michael Jordan debate, and of course now the Golden State Warriors and the Chicago Bulls. From your vantage point, obviously you're Homer, you're a guy here in Chicago, but as a historian, do the Chicago Bulls hold up when it comes to this conversation of winning 6 times in the 90s with teams like the Lakers in the 80s and the Celtics and, of course, the Golden State Warriors now?
Well, I mean, the ultimate is the Celtics of Russell and Red Auerbach, and you're going to hear a lot of people say, oh, there were fewer teams. Well, yeah, there were fewer teams, so the Celtics had a lot of great players, but all of their opponents had a lot of great players. The Celtics, I mean, Bill Russell won 11 titles in 13 years.
That's amazing.
The last two of which he was player coach. He won 2 college titles and a gold medal. So I don't want to hear anything about Bill Russell. Yeah, of course the Bulls hold up. Absolutely. I mean, they're just generational teams, and we haven't seen one like the Bulls. I think that Magic and Kareem's Lakers fit that bill, and the 60s Celtics. But this Warriors team has a chance to do that. I think that every team that wins at least 2 in a row, by the 3rd season, they tend to start to drag a little bit. Even if they three-peat, you start to see some chips, whether it's age or injuries or egos. And the Warriors are just still on cruise control. I mean, we haven't heard any bad vibes coming out of that organization, from the owners to the coaches to the players. Everybody's on board, and I'm very curious to see how that will play out in the coming years, especially as guys' contracts come up and those young guys, well, not young, but Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson are on very favorable contracts.
Yeah,
so
right.
I'm curious to see how that plays out, but they are just a wonderful team, and I feel like you can draw a direct line from those Knicks teams of the 70s that Phil played on to the second three-peat Bulls, and then obviously that team included Steve Kerr and go straight to this Warrior. So I love that team. I think that all the conversation about did Durant, you know, wimp his way into rings and who's better and GOAT and all this, I mean, really, the story is that this Warriors team won 73 games, lost finals, and immediately got on the phone, called up the best available player, and went and met with him and sold him on this idea that he would come to a team where he was arguably going to be the best player and that they wanted him to be a part of what they're doing.
Story.
It's amazing.
The Chicago sports historian and author of How the Goat Was Built, Six Life Lessons from the 1996 Chicago Bulls, Jack Silverstein, on the line with us, talking about tonight being the 20th anniversary of the last time the Bulls won a championship. Hopefully, we will see a Bulls championship sometime.
Another one of these days. Yeah, right.
Jack, great to talk to you. Thanks for being my guest tonight. Appreciate it.
Gosh, thanks so much for having me. And what a night for the download. All the best to you guys.
Thanks, buddy.
And on Sunday, the big heat wave continues with a high of 97. Yeah.
Don't say that. I'm going to be, I'm going to have to go with the short shorts out at the park.
Worse. Just keep thinking. It could be, like, hotter because, we're only in June. So, this is, the
I don't mind. I love hot weather. I'm a hot weather guy. My wife is like, no, I can't deal with it. I don't mind it at all. But, I got to go out. I got my duty on.
That's true.
On Sunday to go to Sox Park and give the game ball to somebody.
I got three words for you: no polyester pants. That's all I'm saying.
Is it? I don't know. I'm going to look at the once we get off the air. I'm going to look at the handbook. But what is the handbook when it comes to being shirtless on field?
Mm.
Can you do that? Can you go shirtless?
I say only if you have a six pack.
The Lagoos were shirtless.
Yeah, right?
The tandem, father-son tandem that beat up the coach.
Oh,
they were shirtless.
Yeah.
I think since then, there hasn't been many shirtless.
Shirtless with blue jeans. Yeah. That's the look I want to go with. Shirtless with the shirt in my back pocket, hanging out with no shirt. And
sunscreen for you. I'm saying sunscreen. You don't look like you tan very well, do you?
No.
Yeah.
My bald head gets burned. But, okay. Well,
anyway. Yeah. So I guess I still have to do this out cue, huh?
So, I guess.
Okay. I'm Pam Jones in the WGN Radio Newsroom, and this is The Stuff That Matters on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah, The Stuff That Matters, my how I tan.
It matters to me. I care about your safety.
Thank you. I am very sensitive about the top of my head. I always am like, I got to wear a hat or something. Because when you burn the top of your head, and I'm bald up at the top there. Oh, that's a pain. That's pain. So there's always that. 312-981-7200. The phone number. My Tony, this is 773. My Tony Kukoc experience. I used to work in the Northbrook Court at Apple. And we'd see Tony at 6 a.m., leading an elderly walking class most mornings around the mall. Really? Wow. I hope that's true, right? That'd be the best thing ever to be like, what do you do? Well, I like to go and have all the people walk around the mall. Are you sure that was Tony Kukoc or just an old Polish lady? oh my gosh. We could do 6 hours on our 98 Bulls sightings. I remember, what's a place called the Hudson Club that used to be over on Wells Street? And that was a place where Jordan and company would go in there and they'd sit in the back. There was like an area you could go. So that was also a place that you could see Jordan. My favorite story ever, Michael Jordan, was John Dempsey. John Dempsey, longtime Chicago media guy. Used to work with him.
Yeah, I love John.
Yeah, John's great. I was producing his show, John Dempsey Show, back in the 90s, mid-90s, 97, 98, somewhere in there, right? And maybe 96, right? It doesn't matter. Jordan did his Elmhurst College basketball camp. And Dempsey got a tip that said that, hey, Jordan shows up on the last day of camp and he does a pickup game with all the counselors and the kids can watch. And it's in the gym at, I think it was Elmhurst College or Elmhurst High. I can't remember where it was. Somewhere in Elmhurst. And so we went out there, and it was kind of crowded, but it wasn't. I mean, I got a seat on a bench, in the bleachers, not too far up. And sure enough, Michael Jordan walks in, super skinny. You would never think, when you see him in person, you're like, oh, that's not how he looks on TV compared to other really tall, really skinny guys, And he gets on. He has such a great time. He plays on the he plays against the counselors, and he plays on the team with the women, and it's so fun to watch. Every time he gets the ball, you want him to just go crazy, right? But he doesn't. He passes it, and he's having fun. It's just a stupid game back and forth. But my favorite thing is Jordan is he drives at one point. They put on a little show. He does a little razzle dazzle, and he drives, and the kid who was covering him, some 20 some odd kid, he falls down. The thing where he stops And the kid like tumbles like over a crossover. And Jordan pops a jumper and everyone cheers. The refs in this game are like the other counselors. The kid gets up and he goes, he pushed off. He pushed off. Like he was mad. He was mad at Michael Jordan. And he went to the ref to yell at the ref, right? And the whole place is like, first of all, it doesn't count for anything. It's a counselor game. Second of all, it's Michael Jordan, and no one buys that he pushed. And if he did push off, who cares? That's what we came to see.
I mean, were there scouts there?
Was he trying to... So my favorite part was on the way back down, and this says a lot about Jordan. It was a one more point for the game, right? It was over, and they're playing buckets, not, you know, it's just one more bucket. And he ISO'd on the kid. He, like, worked it out where he asked for the ball, and everyone got out of the way, and he taught the kid a lesson by completely blowing past him in a way that only superhuman people can do, and tomahawk jamming.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, the ultimate embarrassment to end it. And he didn't say, I'm sorry. He didn't go over there and shake the kid's hand or whatever. He's just like, that's your lesson for thinking that you could complain about my push-off. Good night, everybody.
It was probably in his first draft of his Hall of Fame speech, too. He probably was going to like make fun of that kid in his Hall of Fame speech like he did.
And he learned a valuable lesson as I get inducted to the Basketball Hall of Fame. But that was my Jordan. Pippen, I don't have any Pippins. I remember seeing Pippen. Pippen had a longstanding a reputation in town, and it was no tippin' Pippen. Everyone probably knows that who's listening to this program. So all of the bartenders, who are usually artists and people that you hang around with, I remember people who were 21 years old, 20, and they'd be like, Pippin, oh, no tipping Pippin. I was working at Double Door, he came in and they didn't give me nothing, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know how you get that kind of rep.
Right, and I feel like it was exacerbated by, like, the gossip columns in town, the Sneeds, the Cups.
Oh, really? They made the
Inks.
About it. Yeah.
They wrote about it, and they perpetuated this.
And it's just the rhyming. The rhyming scheme.
It was so good, yeah.
It is good. It is good. No tipping Pippen. And, of course, Scottie Pippen Dodge, which was my favorite thing on Western up in Rogers Park, the Scottie Pippen Dodge. And my favorite part about it is when Scottie got out of town, I think he went to Houston, they stopped with the Scottie Pippen Dodge, and I think it turned into a Hyundai dealership. I forgot what it was. Whatever the popular kind of low-rent car was at the time. If it wasn't Hyundai, it was something. Kia, maybe. And they turned Scottie Pippen Dodge and Western into a Kia dealership or whatever it was. But the stenciling of the sign, because it was Scottie Pippen Dodge and a basketball, you remember that? They couldn't get rid of it, so it was like shadowed. So whatever that was in there, Hyundai or Kia or Saturn, whatever it was, didn't cover up the Scottie Pippen Dodge, so it just looked bad. But at the same time, you're like, hey, that's Scottie Pippen Dodge. You can still see Scottie Pippen Dodge with a basketball. 630 says, MJ was at Elmhurst College. I was there once. Got a one-of-a-kind picture of him right in front of me, shirtless. Oh, Jordan was shirtless.
I wonder how much that would go for in the swap meet.
Save that one for the swap meet.
Yeah.
A shirtless picture of Michael Jordan. That's $1,000. Okay, so that's Scottie Pippen. I feel like there's another. I once saw Scottie Pippen. I worked at Navy Pier. And when I was at Navy Pier, you'd get there in the morning when I had the morning shift. You'd get there 7 o'clock in the morning. And they hadn't really opened the pier yet, but you could still run and bike. And I remember right at that time in the 98 season, walking mindlessly at 7 in the morning down the pier. And Pippen and his son whizzing by on a bike. You know, like they whizzed by and came back around. I was like, oh, yeah. Pippen's riding bikes 7 a.m. So good. Never had a Rodman sighting. I was bummed about that. I wasn't much of a club guy. I wasn't hanging out at Circuit. Wasn't hanging out at Crowbar. Wasn't getting my car towed on Kingsbury at the time. You remember every time I ever chose to go to one of the clubs that Dennis Rodman was featured at, where you'd always see Dennis Rodman on the Dateline. Dennis Rodman hanging out at the club. He's bringing Chicago a new flavor. I'm like, shut up. But whenever I went to any of those clubs, Rodman wasn't there and I got my car towed. It was always in that regard, right? No Rodman. Oh, he's not here? Oh, it's Vampire Night? Cool. All right. Well, I'll have a $11 gin and tonic. That's great. Okay, I'm going to go back to... Oh, car's gone. That's clubbing in Chicago. That's clubbing next to the river. Great memory. That should be a call-in segment. Where did you get your car towed? What club did you go to when you got your car towed? So that's Robin. Ron Harper. Never saw Ron Harper. I love, though, the stories not just about, you know, who you saw, which I think you should be texting in right now because you have seen these people, 312-981-7200, but also where you were when they won. And this is the 20th anniversary of that game, the 98 Bulls. This was the year that, of course, this day, June 14th, 1998, is the day that they won. And I can't remember which one it was because I told a story about being stuck in the Red Line subway after watching one of the games at the Billy Goat. The other time, and I think it was either 97 or 98, we went down to Wrigleyville, and they treated it like riot cops around Wrigleyville and the whole bit, but everyone went down there. And I remember we were at Addison and Halstead, right, just east of Wrigley Field. And there was an old police station. I think it's still there. They've redone it, but it was the old police station. And there was a bunch of comics improvisers that were hanging out. And one of our guys, who was kind of a peripheral guy, kind of knew him, Jason, I think, Joe, I can't remember. All I remember being like, oh, yeah, he's here. That's cool. They were honking horns, and everyone was stuck in traffic there. And he runs out to one of the cars to show off, and he, like, hugs the girls that are in the car, and like, yay! I kid you not. A police officer from the inside of the building opens the door as if she's walking out to get coffee, walks beeline right to him, cuffs him, takes him into the cop shop, and is like, you're out. Like, he was in jail. Like, for going onto the street and hugging these girls in this car, this bit that he was doing for all his friends, he got, I don't know if he got arrested or just apprehended. And we're like, well, that was anticlimactic. That it was not how you thought you'd get arrested for a celebration. And also completely ridiculous when we all shrugged our shoulders like, oh, okay, where to now? Well, what about Jason? Like his girlfriend, what about Jason? We're like, I'll figure it out. I'm glad it wasn't us. It's like, oh, okay. 312-981-7200. 847 says, no tipping Pippin was true. A single mom waitress that worked with my sister. This is how it always starts, right? And I knew someone who worked with my sister's cousin who was a third. No. A single mom waitress who worked with my sister at the Schaumburg Red Lobster.
Why did it have to be a Red Lobster? Really?
The Schaumburg Red Lobster followed him out to the parking lot when she got stiffed by him and asked why. And he just shrugged his shoulders because I'm Pippin. And it rhymes with no tipping. That's awesome. You asked for two things of cheddar biscuits. It was unlimited shrimp, and I brought you unlimited shrimp, Scotty. And I got stiffed on the tip? And what's stiff? Like no tip? Are you just not giving me a tip at all? Like, I always thought it was like, oh, he's going with like the 15, he's a 15%er.
It's so lucky that social media didn't exist at this time, because there would be a picture of that receipt on Twitter, you know, with, you know, Scottie Pippen's signature.
Facebooked live, and running up to him in the Schaumburg
yeah.
Red Lobster.
I mean, they're so lucky.
They're so lucky. This team, too, the 98 Bulls, they are gods to Chicagoans. But they also were super troublemakers. Scottie Pippen was a super troublemaker. Didn't get busted one time at least with a gun in the car. You're like, there's a lot going on that they would have been constantly on social media. I think Tristan Thompson is a big deal. Think about how this Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen were rolling in 98. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back. I want more of these stories. I want more No Tippin' Pippin' stories. And my final download, all I want to do for the next hour, we'll bump Greg everything. It's going to be No Tippin' Pippin' stories at the Schaumburg Red Lobster. Love it. You got stories about where the Bulls hung out, what they did. You know, someone on the special guest on the Celebrity Hotline, Patty Vasquez, joining us. You have stories about the Bulls.
I actually served at a restaurant that many athletes used to hang out at. I don't know if I ever told you this. I've certainly told my audience, and I have no shame about it. I used to be a theater girl.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yep, over there on Wells and Erie.
So they would go in there? There were a lot of guys, a lot of the athletes would go in there?
Almost, I would say, a lot of Cubs players, a lot of Bulls players. Mm. We had Pippen, Rodman, we had there was this. Who was the center? He was really nice, actually.
Luke Longley, Bill Wennington.
Luke Longley. Yeah, there were a couple guys, and Harper. Harper's coming too.
I love that they're all hanging out at the Hooters. It's a big city and a lot of places to go, and they're like, hey, we're going to the Hooters.
Well, as you can imagine, a lot of the girls were very, you know, attentive, and they would get a lot of attention there. And it was a very fun place for them to go. I was not good at that part of it. I was a server. I wasn't good at the flirtation part, which a lot of the players came to expect. You remember who was the player that disappeared? Williams? Do you remember him?
Yeah, right. We talked about that, yeah.
Yes. He was an interesting character, but Pippin was in the back of the restaurant, and he was hanging out with some of the girls, and a guy and his son walked by, and they asked me, is that Pippin in the back? And I said, yeah, it is. And they said, would you ask him for an autograph? You know, I'm like, how do I let a kid down? So I walked back, I said, look, this kid's too shy to come back here and ask you for an autograph. Would you mind signing a menu? And he handed it to one of the waitresses and said, here, sign this for me.
Oh, my God. Come on, yep. Scotty.
Nope. I'm not that creative, my friend. I don't write these things. They just happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So that's kind of a friend. That's not, I knew somebody who knew somebody else.
Nope. That's the real deal.
Right in front of my, and I went back to them and I said, I'm sorry. He just walked out the back door. Just to not, I wasn't going to tell them.
You weren't going to fake it, right?
No. Nope.
Well, I love it. Patty gives us the real deal. Thanks, Patty.
Yep, I'll see you in a little bit. See you probably get going.
Yeah, exactly. Patty on at 11 o'clock tonight. That's great. She's right, perfect. The way that, yes, all I've been getting is, I had a friend who had a friend whose sister said, and Patty comes through with the, nope, it happened to me. And that and it plays right into your thought, Pete, just this idea. If there was social media right now, Pippin would not be able to get away with that. They'd be taking pictures. There'd be secret video of him doing that. There'd be all sorts of that. Now it's just a story in the ether. But then it would have had retweets a whole bit. Coming up here, Greg Flam's going to join us for the last swap meet, 312-981-7200. I was told by coworkers, 847 says, that a delivery company that Pippin never tipped during Christmas. Poor Pippin. And then 847 says, stiffed means no tip, genius. Because I had said earlier about, all right, thanks. It's just not a final download. It's just not a download till I'm yelled at by the listeners. I love it. 312-981-7200. Greg Flam going to join us at DuPage Picker. So if you've got your Bulls memorabilia tonight, we could talk about the 20th anniversary of the Bulls championship against the Utah Jazz in 98. Or if you've got that menu signed by Pippin, or you thought up to this point and you just heard Patty and you're like, oh, he didn't sign any of that stuff. Now's the time to call. We'll get everybody lined up. We'll get Greg in studio, and we'll continue the download. Stay with us.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam. He's in the building. What's up? At DuPage Picker here on 720 WGN. This segment sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here.
At DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. 312-981-7200. This is our segment we do every week where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk.
Yep.
It's a simple process. You got something you think it's worth something, Greg will tell you.
That's right.
And if you have something you want to brag about, I'll give away a pizza. It's the best brag, Chicago brag. I got to think about this memory. This week, someone bragged to me about something they had that I was like, it's not swap meet time, but thank you. I'm not just walking around with pizzas in my jacket.
Yeah, gift cards, right?
Exactly. Good to see you. How are you? So what's going on? So how has the garage sale season?
Great.
Is this a good, strong garage season so far?
Yeah, we're peak season now until Labor Day, maybe later. I wanted to see just on the gsailor.com app, I wanted to just glance to see how many garage sales there were in the area, and it was in like the hundreds. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, and the best are the subdivision sales. You can knock out, you know, 10, 12 in one subdivision, go to the next one. This week, I know there's a lot of subdivision sales in Naperville, Aurora. There's sales all over. Just get the gsailor.com app.
I love it. Yep. Gsailor.
Free app.
Free app, good. I don't know if I would be dropping $2.99.
Yeah, I know, $4.99 for that. Just, you know, look in the paper.
Yeah, I was going to say.
For the sales, right?
Right. 312-981-7200, the phone number. We'll get you lined up right now. You can text, you can call. And again, the best brag's going to win a pizza tonight. Greg, what do you got? Do you bring good stuff in for us each week for the final spot here in the download?
Yeah,
what do
you got? Got some good stuff. I realized over the last 2 years, I have never brought in pennants. So I brought five or six pennants. My favorite, this one I just got last week, actually, is the Museum of Science and Industry with the U505 sub. And oddly enough, there's like only one on eBay right now. So
it's a green guy.
It's got, you know, like it's silk screen printed. It's got U.S. Navy captured German submarine U505, June 4, 1944. And, you know,
Pennants.
My memory and my education of this was so wrong. I really thought that they found the sub originally in Lake Michigan. And turns out, you know, that is not the case.
Turns out that's not the
case. But they did cross Lakeshore Drive with it.
Yeah, so, and they had the great story that they had to build around it or whatever to get it in.
Yeah.
But the pennants, man, I just had a flashback to my room as a kid.
Yeah.
And there was a time where I was trying to collect all the pennants from all of the baseball teams, all the like 80s baseball teams.
And oddly you say that, I am hanging on to this one, my Montreal Expo one. And because obviously they're no longer, so this should only go up in value. I do have like a Bulls Eastern Championship, which is probably out of all these the most valued one. It's about a $20 pennant for
this
one.
And that's from just says.
And I don't know what year. It's just says Eastern Conference. So, you know,
it could have been when they were losing to the Pistons.
And, you know, I got my Bears, and then I'm not really a soccer guy, but I loved the Chicago Sting when they were out as a kid. I just loved their logo, the yellow and black.
Yeah, look
so
at
I
that.
Did find a really cool Chicago Sting one, and I've had these for years. I just don't know why I've never brought them into the download, so I'm sharing that.
And then how many of you have that are like the ends are folded and ruined like I had?
That's the thing. Like if there are tack holes, that devalues it. A lot of what people put pictures of, you're selling a pennant online, you want to hold it by the end and take a picture because people want to know if it's still stiff or is it drooping a lot. And
mine are both droopy and tack holes.
Yeah, so maybe missing the corner as well.
And I just need to go back. If there was a time machine, I would go back in time, not to solve the world's problems, but to tell myself when I was 8 to stop messing around with the corners of the pennant.
Yeah, and your posters, you know, put them in frames. Don't tack the corners, you know.
You do not want this pennant to go droopy,
right,
young Justin? I have to go.
Yeah.
Well, we have some good stuff because we were just talking about someone 630 had a good picture of Michael Jordan shirtless in Elmhurst College. That's always a good one. Yep. And then also Patty, such an amazing story about how Scottie Pippen wanted a waitress to sign a menu for him. So hopefully we'll get some good Bulls tonight in the 20th anniversary of the last championship. 312-981-7200. Someone asked, can you please repeat the garage sale web address?
Okay, if you just go on your app store, it's spelled GSALR, and that's the way it's spelled, gsailor.com, skip the E. And it's a free app. If you just punch in even garage sales on any of the apps, that GSailor app should come up.
Okay.
One or two.
All right.
And it will give you directions to there. It will give you like kind of what's in the sale. The times, everything like that. And I wanted to give a tip, too, to people who are doing a garage sale. Don't bother writing your address on the sign. People are going 20, 25 miles an hour past the sign. They can't read the address. Right. The best thing to do is just put a big arrow. And then whenever that next turn is, put another arrow. That is like the best way to direct people to your
it's
sale.
It's like the billboards on the Kennedy. All right, I know you can do them electronic now, digital, but you don't need to write a paragraph on that thing.
Yeah, and if you have that app, of course, that will GPS you to them, so that's cool, too.
There you go. All right, so 773 says, one last swap. Are we ready to rock?
Let's do it.
All right. I have the full Megazord collection from Caillou Ranger. It's the Japanese Power Rangers.
Okay.
I don't even know what that is and what that means, but I guess that's the Power Rangers we know, the cartoons.
Yeah, I don't know the year that was, but almost all of that Megazord, Dragonzord stuff, you know, like pre-97, is huge money. I mean, I have a friend at Palatine Wolf's Flea Market that just sold one for, I think, $180 in the package, like almost brand new.
Was it just a figure?
And it was just a Megazord. You know, it's just kind of a Transformer type, you know, figure from, and it's also associated with Power Rangers. That they made, you know, Dragon Zord, Megazord, and I'm not a big fan of it, so I can't go on too much with the right. names of them. But if you have any of that Power Rangers, Megazord, Transformer stuff, especially from pre-95, pre-90, it's really big money.
Yeah, they give us a little bit more. They said it's never released. It was never released in the U.S.
Wow, even better.
319 says, I've got a signed Greg Maddux rookie card.
I'd have to look
at Greg Maddux rookie card. Now, that would be, of course, with the Cubs as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Once he gets close to good, they're like, you got to go. It's the old way of the Cubs, right?
Yeah.
But, of course, his rookie year with the Chicago Cubs, Greg Maddux signing a... Now, Patty blew my mind. Somebody signed it. Maybe it wasn't yet to be in the
that's
presence
the problem,
of Greg
Maddux. Yeah, that's why those authenticators have jobs.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. Greg Maddux, rookie card for the Chicago Cubs.
Let's see. Rookie card's kind of hard here. A baseball's like one for $400. I forgot to throw a rookie in here. Let me do that. But, yeah. What? So, hundreds of dollars. And a rookie, let's see.
Pete, when was Maddux? I remember Maddux, obviously the 89 season and him diving in the no lights season.
86, I think he was a 20-year-old rookie.
Bright-eyed.
Yeah.
Bushy-tailed.
I was going to say, Greg Maddux is one of those guys, you know, I loved as, you know, the Cub. And then, you know, he went on to all his great success with the Braves for all those years. And they came back, you know, for a year or two with the Cubs. And, like, you know, the Cubs pretend like all those years in Atlanta never happened. Like, right. He really wasn't his Hall of Fame self.
That was when he was pitching in 87 that changed the game.
Right? Yeah. Ali, a signed rookie card is only about $70, $80. Mm. So that's kind of surprising.
35 cents and you got gum out of it too. You got gum out of the deal too, so that works out.
Yeah,
Greg Flamm is here. Yeah, right. He's here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. 312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about? This is Swap Meet. Stay with us.
Infected. Infected. That would be a news story. Yeah,
that would be. Zika style. I was looking at an old carryout from this week, and I think it was from last year or the year before, and it was all about Zika. The Zika virus. Yep. That's 2016. It was before the... I was going to do a thing where I read old carryouts from June 14th, 2016. And I got bored with it. But I realized jokes weren't that great. But
now there was, you say Zika and you're thinking of like an alcoholic drink.
Yeah. It was right before the Rio Olympics in 2016. Yep. There was like three or four
South
Zika.
South Park did an episode on it. Yeah.
There you go. Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. It's Swap Meet. Excited to evaluate your memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. 630 says, I got an autographed 1945 World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers signed baseball from the whole team, signed in person. I met them at their hotel restaurant.
1945.
World Series champion LA Dodgers.
Wow.
Met them at their hotel restaurant. I mean, a baseball team is like 35 people?
Yeah, that's hard to
believe. So 35 people are hanging out at the hotel restaurant like, I'll have a BLT. Yeah. I'll have some scrambled eggs. In 1945?
I'd be more apt to believe a 1945 team would actually sign it than like today.
Yeah, right.
You know, you would think it'd be more auto pen.
Right.
But yeah, it looks like that year, team signed went for about $590, it looks like. So that's pretty good.
Wow. Let's keep going here. 773 says, send us a picture, too, of classic lawn darts.
Awesome.
Classic lawn darts. These are great. These are black market, man. You get caught with these in your car. It's Scottie Pippen time.
Yeah, and you know, I could tell you right now, if you look on eBay, people are selling the empty boxes because you cannot sell the darts. So people will list it as empty box, but they're really sending the darts with it. That's how they're getting around it.
Yeah, right.
And they're going for anywhere from $100 to $400, depending which brand you have.
That's hilarious.
And it's crazy, yeah.
It says at the bottom, warning, not a toy for use for children, may cause serious or fatal injury. Read instructions carefully.
Yep.
Keep out of reach of children.
Yeah, they were...
at least they had their bases covered.
Yeah, they're a dangerous toy early on.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. Let's see here. We've got a very heavy dark square oak table with four built-in beverage slash mug holders, one on each side. Think of it like a tavern table.
Yeah.
Are those going for anything? Are those hard to, I mean, it's hard with furniture because
yeah, it is.
You have to be, there's a lot of this stuff is based on the brand and the understanding of what it was, and it's appreciated over time.
Right.
When you just start talking about a table, that's hard, right? I've noticed through swap meet time that's hard.
Yeah, there's condition issues. There's, you know, the brand, if there is a brand, or is it just homemade, or someone, you know, just one-off thing. Right. But yeah, if you want to send it to the Facebook page, I'll be happy to research that for you.
And look at this. 847 is also questioning the validity of that 1945 ball. The Dodgers' first year in L.A., 1958.
There we go.
So there you go. So
45. That's why I kind of asked, like,
would it be the Brooklyn Dodgers at that time, 1945? Is that what they mean?
Yeah, maybe that's what they meant.
Yeah. Mary Ellen is on the line. Mary Ellen, what do you want to brag about?
I have it's a booklet of it says the Elvis Presley album of jukebox favorites. It's sheet music for 12 songs put together in a booklet with some very interesting photographs that I've never seen before. There's Elvis water skiing and with band members, and there's a photograph of his parents and one of his Cadillacs, and it's. Some of these songs are I Forgot to Remember to Forget, okay. I'm Left, You're Right, She's Gone, things that I've never heard of. So I have the cover has fallen off. It is from 1956, and it was published somewhere in New York, Hill & Range Sons Publishing Company in New York City in 1956.
Okay. All right, thank you there. What do you think? Mary Ellen's got a booklet of Elvis songs from the 50s without the cover.
Yeah, that's...
Do you still have the cover?
It's falling apart.
Oh, yeah. Well, which is what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to do that. You know, that's what the idea of a 60-plus-year-old thing, but...
Yeah, I'm not finding that, but just typical Elvis sheet music, anywhere from $10 to $20 per song of the sheet music. But that booklet, it's very rare, so if you do sell it, make sure you do an auction.
And use duct tape. Okay. You got duct tape inside to keep that cover on it.
The Justin Kaufman now.
Yeah, put some glue on that thing. Thanks, Mary.
Okay, thank you very much. Though.
Thanks.
That's a good find. 312-981-7200. I've got... let's see, autographed card of Aaron 612 says, I have an autographed card of Rokans from late 90s. Awesome. More importantly, if you have not seen the late 90s Rokan headshot, it is a sight to be seen.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's a leather jacket. It's Bad Boys of Radio kind of vibe. He's got his hair is feathered and back.
I was gonna say, how high is that?
Looks good. It looks good. He's got the leather jacket. It's just sort of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work at WLS, so they had a hallway of, various, Row and, posters everywhere. And I forgot that there was one with Row and Bill Leff.
Oh, yeah.
And I forgot that they were partners for a while.
Right. Yeah, that's a good look, man. I saw it. I forgot where I saw the, it might have been in one of our cabinets cleaning out, but the Rokan headshot.
Nice.
There's all sorts. It's really fun. We should give you... we'll walk in there in the break. There's a bunch of old headshots that have been found of a lot of the morning show people, Cochran, Andrea, a lot of people down the line. It's really fun to look at what they look like.
Nice.
What look to be the
90s. If I saw this at sales, I would grab them.
You grab them?
Yep.
All right. 312-981-7200. 773 says the 1945 World Series was the Cubs versus the Tigers. What's going on? Maybe it was a 54 or a 45. Yeah. Because they said 1945, maybe they meant 54. Or something.
I was thinking 59 was the Sox, right?
Yeah.
So I thought
this turned from swap meet to mystery.
Right.
Mystery hour here on the download. 312-981-7200. We got some more to get through. Greg Flam is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Our last swap meet in the download time slot before we both move from the tower, but also. The end of the download, as we know it, as we've been saying tonight. This is our final show as we are moving to the Cochran Show permanently coming up on Monday. Greg Flam is here. We'll take a quick break, and we'll continue. Stay with us.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's
It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam.
Second half.
There we go. At you, Page Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter here every week, Wednesdays and Thursdays. Of course, the download ending tonight. Greg will be making the trek to mornings to join us in the Steve Cochran Show. Working out the times.
Yep. It'll be fun.
We got to work out, you know, Greg's sleep schedule. We've got a lot we've got to figure out.
The garage sale schedule.
Right. Yeah. Your garage sale schedule. I don't want you to have to get out of line at an estate sale.
Monday through Wednesday, preferably. Thursday, Friday's peak day. But whatever you need.
We're going to call you on the bat phone.
Yeah.
It's going to be like the swap meet phone. Like, we need you now. And you'll be like great. Third in the estate sale line. You'll be like, I can't. Right. There's so many lunch boxes in there I want to get.
That's right. So many toys.
So many toys. 312-981-7200. And we're going to be going out to Wolf's Flea Market, which this segment is sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. Mm-hmm. Sometime in the next couple of weeks, we'll announce when it's going to be. And we're going to do a live to tape, or maybe a Facebook Live, but also tape it for the podcast.
Yep.
Really be able to get the people that are out there and the experts. And
you are really going to be surprised just how much fun it is, and just how many people are there, how many vendors are there. You really will be like, wow, I didn't know this existed. You know, that's usually what everyone says the first time out.
Well, I know it exists because, as you could see it from the highway, I mean, it's amazing when you go on the Kennedy there, you're like, wow, look at what's happening there.
Even Palatine, like, wow, I didn't know this exists. I didn't know there were this many vendors or this much cool stuff in here. So,
Aaron in 630 says, Greg and Justin, what do I do to cash in this one-of-a-kind awesome picture of a shirtless MJ? They found a shirtless MJ, or they took the picture of a shirtless MJ.
At Elmhurst College,
At Elmhurst College. Not worth anything?
I'm sure it is. Jordan stuff usually has no problem selling. It's just a matter of price.
Softcore
Jordan
stuff?
In the picture with Jordan, or is it if it's just Jordan, you'll probably make more money. Yeah, right.
It's got a nice filter on it.
Yeah, right.
Sweaty, shirtless Jordan.
Yeah. If he's in the picture, it won't be as high as if it's just Jordan. So
there you go. All right. Well, we'll consider that. There's also a plaque here, a framed 1995-96 Chicago Bulls 72 wins, 10 losses, NBA record. It's the shot of them, the famed team pitcher.
Yeah. I see that quite often. I'm going to guess it's probably in the $75 range, unless it's one of the larger size one, or if it's signed, that makes a difference. So.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's
but
signed.
But they're kind of common.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going. A 1905 Edison crank Victrola in cabinet with approximately 40 glass recordings. A 1905 Edison Victrola. Wow.
That is awesome.
1905.
I know. Just the player itself is recently sold for $725, and that's on eBay, where it's a big item, the ship and everything, so they probably worked out a local pickup, but it's still got $725 just for the player.
Wow.
I don't know what the glass songs or the rolls or whatever those are, what those go for, but that only would be added on if yours is in good condition or working condition.
Yeah, that's awesome. Right now, that's the leader for the Lou Malnati's Pizza, don't you think?
That
1905 Victrola.
With 40 glass.
I'm waiting personally to when the Victrola sound gets introduced to hip-hop. You know, like they'll sample a bunch of different songs and journey. Yeah. Like you've seen like a lot of adult contemporary, maybe some country getting repped in a Drake song.
Yeah.
But I want to hear the Victrola.
With a banjo, What was the song? One hit wonder, My Woman. It was like a Q101 hit.
And that had a
It seemed
Victrola?
Like in the background they had the Victrola sound going on in the background, a sample.
309 says the 1969 Cubs team autographed baseball.
Wow.
1969. Remember that when that used to be the year that everybody cared about?
Until August?
Not anymore.
Or late
like up. The 1969 stuff just depreciated drastically when the Cubs won the World Series.
And I'm so grateful, because that used to always irritate me. Why are we celebrating losers?
That was a baseball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Autographed team baseball. Why are we celebrating? Well, that was the entire Cubs thing, wasn't it? Like, they're always celebrating losers.
Yeah. But, it's like having a shirt that says, like, the 1987 Bears.
Right.
You know, they were good, but didn't do anything.
Right.
So true. 1969 signed team ball recently sold for $200.
Oh, wow. That's way too much money.
I think that was a little high, yeah.
I love the 87 Bears.
Mm.
That's my favorite. I wish there was a bunch of 87 Bears stuff. Or like, well, the year before before Dick had got fired, there was one year, like maybe in 90 or 89, where they were back. They were like 10-6 or 11-5. And you're like, oh, Lemuel Stinson. And you know what I mean? Like, you're just like, that's the team that we should. Wow, I've got a 1990 Bears ball signed by Lemuel Stinson. Oh, 250.
Nice. Very good.
All right. 630 says they got a 1967 Zenith X930. It is a radio. Last week, I drove down to Ottawa to check out another radio. The guy, John, was busy cleaning out his mom and stepdad's house. It was straight out of American Pickers. It's a lot of stress on the poor guy. Anyway, he asked if he had kids. He said yes. He said, don't do this to them. The radio looked in great shape. It worked, so I said I'd take it. He refused payment. He wanted it to go to a good home and not wind up in a dumpster. I will. Wow. I have enough, so it's going to a family member or a friend, whoever will use it. Value doesn't matter. But a 1967 Zenith X930 works perfectly.
Okay.
That's a great story. Thanks for sending that in.
And, you know, the problem with a lot of that type of phonographs or radios, they're just so big that people just don't want to move them around, or they end up getting rid of them or donating them. You could try to do consignment where people pick them up.
Yeah,
that's your best option maybe, but I would do just eBay local pickup myself. But I'm trying. I had 69, not 67. So,
oh, sorry,
no problem. I am 1967
Zenith X930.
Yeah, I'm not finding any.
Well, what was the 69 one?
Here we go. We got one here. Oh, no, it's an X316, went for $40. Yeah, I'd have to guess. I'm going to say a few hundred dollars, you know, and that, again, is going to be a local pickup, but well, do an auction.
He doesn't care. He doesn't want to. You don't want to give it away. He's just telling us a good story, I guess.
It is. It's just one of those things that's hard to move.
All right. Let's keep going. Okay, we did the crank. I've got it here. Hold on. A baseball signed by 9 or 10 of the Negro League baseball players, including Larry Doby and Buck O'Neill.
Wow!
I have a picture, me and Buck O'Neill. And I, you know, I don't know what I was doing with my ties. Way too long. I'm going very Trump in the ties. It was like a 21-year-old Justin with Buck O'Neill after an interview.
Nice.
And my hair was out of control. And the tie was way too long. I think it was green pants. Like, there's a lot going on that was just wrong at that time.
Obviously, my memory of Larry Doby was the shorts era Sox uniforms in the, what is that, 77? Yeah. Was he manager or a coach that year? I think he was a coach. Or he's a manager. He was a manager, right?
Was he?
Yeah.
No. I should know. I read Joe Knoll's book.
No. Yeah. While signed Doby is about 40, Buck O'Neill, sadly, about $20, you can get signed memorabilia from either one. Yeah, you'd think it'd be more, but the team thing might go up. But again, you're dealing with a team with all those signatures that makes it hard to verify. You know.
Well, that seems to be where memorabilia is at, right? I mean, a lot of times people have value of things that are signed by other people, and we've done the swap meet for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. It just feels like that almost was always where they go to. Like, that's what people see when they talk about memorabilia, is whether or not it's signed.
Yep. And it's one thing to have a sign, but your value is almost better with one signature than the team, because it's easier to verify that signature, and it's almost it's always doubted that the whole team signed whatever it is.
I have signed two things. I've got two things that were signed by celebrities in the last 10 years of my life. You ready for them? Let's see if they're worth anything.
Okay.
One was on a random piece of paper, Gallagher, the comedian.
Did it have, like, stains of watermelon or anything?
No, it was just Gallagher.
Oh, man.
And I found it the other day when I was going through my stuff. I'm like, oh, Gallagher signed this flyer. So there's Gallagher. And then this one, which I don't have anymore. I don't know where it went. But it's kind of the best signing story of all time. I was at WGN Morning News, and I was a guest on the show for comedy for a Schadenfreude bit. There. And if you've been up to the spot, there's a lot of set building and stuff that happens. So there's a lot of random wood, things like that. Well, the show that Schadenfreude was on that day featured in front of us Hacksaw Jim Duggan. If you remember Hacksaw Jim Duggan, he was a wrestler, a WWF wrestler, right? And he had long blonde hair, and he would have this kind of thing where he'd almost do like a, he'd get crazy and he'd do like a goose step, but it went around the ring. But his thing was that he always carried around a 2x4, right? That was his bit. I don't know what he's a wood guy. but he'd always have a 2x4, so he smacked a ton of people with a 2x4. I don't get the bit, and I'm sure someone can explain what the bit was, but that's what he would do. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he was there, and I snuck into the shop area of WGN Morning News up there, right there, Addison and Western, our same company now, and I got a 2x4. And he signed it in marker, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, on the 2x4. That's got to be worth something, right? The fact that that's a double sign. That's like, not only is it a sign, but it's on the actual prop that he would use. And then I promptly lost it. Oh, I mean, man. I don't even think it left the building. I mean, I think it was one of those things like, really? You got this little bun? And we're like, who's got
it? Reused in another prop or something.
And now it's like on Pat Tomasulo's set somewhere. But right. Hacksaw Jim Duggan signing a 2x4 will always be.
Right. Yeah. Well, first off, the Gallagher, his highest signing item, anything, is $20. But
classic.
The wrestler, his action figures still go for a $250.
See?
You know, so if you had signed, and here's someone who actually had a 2x4 sign, and they got $112 for it. That would have been a nice dinner for your
please
wife.
Please don't tell me that was
I hope your wife's listening, and I hope she... she
would that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a YouTube thing. It's Larry Potash being like, I've got this 2x4.
They're going to find it now. Someone's going to look around.
That's probably the one.
It's probably under a platform somewhere.
Yeah, you know. Or that they sold mine.
Yeah, behind the Bozo Circus set that they still have in the hallways.
And the last one tonight that ended up 309, Harold Ramis signed Groundhog Day DVD. So Harold Ramis signing a Groundhog Day. That's pretty good, don't you think?
Yeah, I would. Signed.
Before we go, while Greg's looking, I want to give my props to Larry Doby. I feel he was not honored properly in the segment as being the second African American after Jackie Robinson to play baseball.
That's correct. Yeah, we did not mention it. We just mentioned the Sox and the
broke
shorts.
The color barrier in the American League and was the second African American manager.
And his
after Frank Robinson.
That being said, his interview, his autographs were $10-$15.
But Greg Flamm, you know, he played with shorts.
Yeah,
that's my
just kidding, Greg.
Preteen years, Comiskey Park. $25 on the Harold Ramis item.
And then Jeff Carlin, our esteemed colleague, who's the producer of the Roe Khan Show, Dana DeMontes, says he's got a Bulls repeat the three-peat official championship hat.
Hat, okay.
Slightly worn. Slightly worn.
$45.
There you go.
I have the same with a t-shirt, and I can't get $20 for it. So,
Greg Flamm, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, joins us every week on the Swap Meet. As the download is ending, he is going to move to Steve Cochran's show with us, and we'll do the Swap Meet in the morning to a whole new audience and to people who listen to this regularly at night. We're excited to do that. That'll be coming up here this summer. Greg, always a pleasure, buddy, and thanks
always.
For being
Good
a guest
luck to you guys.
On the show. We appreciate it. Well, that's going to do it tonight. For the download, 720 WGN. I am Justin Coffin. Coming up at 11 o'clock, Patty Vasquez takes over with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. They will be taking over the slot coming up here on Monday. Patty and Andrea Darlis. Pete and I are moving to the morning show. As you are aware, or maybe not, tonight is the final broadcast of the download. Pete and I are moving to the mornings to join Steve Cochran on the Steve Cochran Show starting Monday. The download will continue as a podcast in our digital space, which you can find at WGNradio.com or through iTunes or your preferred podcast destination. I wanted to take a minute to thank Download Nation for taking a chance on a rookie broadcaster with a vision for a program that would truly be a Chicago show. We prided ourselves on being a show that would not just represent one part of this city, and this region, but all of it. Whether that was an 83-year-old grandmother reflecting on her life with Alzheimer's to a 17-year-old artist making beats in his bedroom, whether it was a famous athlete explaining the highlights and lowlights of his career to a fighter in a local gym trying to make his dreams come true, to a family member who lost their loved one to gun violence, to a reformed gang member whose words dripped with remorse, to a historian documenting our storied past, to the Chicagoans who lived it. An author, comedian, musician, chef, politician, a business owner, a listener. We're all connected by the lives we live and the stories we collect. And no political persuasion or toxic climate can change that. In a world now that makes money by keeping us apart, we need more than ever to stay together. Sometimes the download was more than just a talk show. I saw it as a duty, a model for the future, a chance for all of us to hear each other's stories, to better understand ours. Finding new perspectives, hearing your neighbor's point of view, attempting to break down biases and the walls that others have built up around us, giving respect to diverse voices and topics that rarely get the time of day. There's really no place to do that, so why not do it here? And it worked. You listened. And we all had something to contribute, whether it was a talent, a voice, an opinion, memorabilia, or an accent. See, radio is pretty simple. I was once told that radio is just people talking to people about people. And as technology emerges and adapts, some things, well, they stay the same. The Download was a show about Chicago, starring those who know it well. Thanks for listening.
To my daughter's eyes and realize I'ma learn through her. The Messiah might even return through her. If I'ma do it, I gotta change the world through her. Furs in the bins, gramps wanting them. Demons and old friends, pops, they hunting them. The chosen one from the land of the frozen sun. But drunk nights can remember more the sober ones. Walk like warriors, we were never told to run. Explore the world to return to where my soul begun. Never looking back or too far in front of me. The present is a gift and I just wanna be.
That's gonna do it for the Download tonight and forever. Patty Vasquez is here with Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, which only has...
It's not gone forever, though. You're still doing a podcast.
The podcast will be daily, and we're working that out. We got to wait till the studios are all built over this basic going. But
yes.
Our first guest on the Download podcast next week will be Sam Richardson, who is the great star of the show Detroiters and was on Veep. He's a tremendous kid who used to be on stage at Second City here in Chicago. He's going to be our first guest coming up when we... debut next week because it's on the podcast. Your show, so Pretty Late becomes so something
me the,
else, right?
Give me the keys?
Here are the keys.
I can I have the keys to the show? Can I have the keys to your time slot?
Sound effects machines.
Last night a listener said, I'm so glad they're cutting you down to 2 hours. And I said, actually, I'm getting the 7 to 11 slot.
Well, I got called genius tonight. So
genius. Was it all caps?
And it's one of my favorite put-downs. Genius.
Genius. I like the all caps.
Even the opposite.
I worry that someone's keyboard is stuck. I want to go help them. And when people are very upset with the sound coming from the radio, I offer to send help to maybe show them how the buttons work. But I am also, as you can tell, moderating my speed.
Yeah,
I know that some of your listeners are often taken aback by the speed at which I speak. So I want this to be an adjustment.
You speak at the right frequency.
It's like, I like to think of it as jazz.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fast, sometimes it's slow.
That's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
Depends.
I like that.
Depends on what mood we're in.
What do you have coming
everything.
Up on the show?
Everything. I got everything coming up tonight.
So are you excited? I mean, Andrea comes on Monday, but this is, effectively, it's the end of Pretty Late,
it
right?
It is. It'll be the Patty Vasquez show with Andrea Dallas. I am. I mean, I actually, you know, being in this time slot previously, obviously of 11 p.m. to 2 a.m., a lot of people take naps in order to be ready for my show. And I just got a phone call from my first guest who said they overslept.
Ah.
So I just think that's appropriate. He actually also happens to have been my very first guest when when I was just hosting on Sunday nights. So I don't know if he's still coming. So I don't want to say who overslept and slept through their
slot.
Get your
butt down here. Right.
But we have a lot of conversations tonight. But a lot of my friends who become friends because of the show, people that we've met along the way, Ken Jakubowski will be down.
Okay.
We have Scott Stantis on the phone to talk about Rob Roger, who was fired from the Pittsburgh Gazette. He was the cartoonist.
I saw the scroll on that tonight on CNN. Yeah.
Yes, so that's I don't know how many people are paying attention to it, but he has a lot of cartoons that are critical of President Trump, and he has been fired. So we'll talk about that.
Well, Patty, I enjoyed being next to you in shows and the crosstalk, and of course, being in the same space. We've seen each other
for the keys. I appreciate that.
Here are the keys.
That is so many keys.
That is a lot of keys.
Man.
Congratulations, and we look forward to listening to the new show coming up, but we still have two pretty late.
Tonight, tomorrow, yes. Yeah, and I will see you in passing.
We'll
I come in the Cochrane Show once in a while.
We'll have you. Yeah, we'll have you.
Once a month. I appreciate it. Oh, thanks. I now know who the gatekeeper is. Yeah, we'll have you.
Now I speak for Cochrane.
Oh, fair enough.
Steve said he likes what you're doing, Patty.
Are you his body guy? That would be amazing.
What Steve's trying to say here, Patty, is...
Now I get it. It's all making so much more sense. Have a wonderful adventure, and I'll see you in a couple days at the new place.
Yep.